Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listening, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Bengals and Browns reported to training camp Tuesday. Both teams are out on the practice fields today and will begin the preseason in 2 weeks. Next Thursday is the Hall of Fame game in Canton. On Tuesday, the Browns made cornerback Denzel Ward the league's highest paid defensive back with a 2-year, $62.2 million deal that includes $52.3 in guarantees. In college football, Big Ten Media Days roll along in Chicago. Conference Commissioner Tony Petitti says if the playoffs expand, they'll likely do away with the Big Ten title tilt. Ohio State's head coach Ryan Day is expected to speak this afternoon between 12 and 1 o'clock. You'll also hear from Julian Sain, Jeremiah Smith, and Jalen McClain. In baseball yesterday, the Reds and Guardians split a doubleheader. They'll play one more tonight at 7:10. Wednesday's winner gets the Ohio Cup. This update is sponsored by TurboTrack Realty. Done with that property? Call John Kozik at TurboTrack Realty for a cash offer. 614-470-2000. Breaking sports news when it happens on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then it's a rundown. And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Loaded up. A Hey Guys First Friday coming your way at 10 o'clock this week in just one segment of it. So the best one's going to get the airtime. We will do that coming up at 10 o'clock. 10:15, a little bit of higher or lower. 10:30, Austin Ward will... Jake will join us, of course, on a First Friday at 10:30. 11 o'clock, 20 most interesting. Texas A&M, you're officially endorsed at 11:48. It's a big day in the Buckeye State, kids, if you like your football. You got your Buckeyes over at the Al Capone Hotel in downtown Chicago. They will be meeting the media. That will happen, we think, around 1:30 here local. Is that where we're at? 12:30 Central Time. But I've seen all sorts of different times for this, so we'll see. Because I saw one that said noon. Bake and I were talking. Is it 1:15? Which time is it? And by the way, just do it all on Eastern Time.
So the according to the Big Ten... It's 12:15 Central Time for Ryan Day, so that would be a 1:15.
Okay,
here.
Fine. So. Okay.
But then Ohio State says 12:30 on a tweet this morning.
And CBS Sports says noon.
Noon.
So.
You tell it. Like either way, it'll be with AR. Thing
drives us nuts because we'd like to carry his comments when he takes the podium.
That's exactly right. Yeah, and Rothman and I would love to take it, and we'd love to have all of it, but... You got to know when it's happening if you're going to do it. So get your act together over there, Big Ten. Let's get these things sorted out. So you have that going on today. You have the first practice for the Bengals and the Browns today. The Browns are going to go today around 1 o'clock as they'll get started the Todd Monken era. So we'll see what happens with all of that. And just proof that football is back. I did spend a little bit of time this morning listening to my old buddy Kevin Stefanski's press conference down in Atlanta in advance of their training camp. He was peppered with questions about the quarterbacks and answered nothing. So I said, we're back.
Do you think
Stefanski's back.
You think he thought he'd have Cooper Rush in his quarterback room right now?
Probably not.
Life comes at you fast. I don't think life's in the NFL has come any faster than Kevin Stefanski in his quarterback situations.
Every single
year for the last five seasons.
Yeah, really. Since Bake, it's been, you know, one thing after another. One battle after another.
Here's my plan. You sure about that?
Yeah, right. Are you sure? So last week, and I was out, but caught up on it over the weekend and on flights. Greg Sankey at the SEC Media Days rattled some sabers. He threw some things at the wall. He yelled in the corner and said, look at me. And by Sankey, I'm also saying the collective SEC, because you had their coaches saying it as well. We're ready to leave. We've had enough. We're going to do our own thing. And they were loud about it. And it was kind of like, for me, like a little bit like a kid looking for attention. A little bit of, you better do something or we're going to do something on our own. And there's a great scene in the a fantastic Western called Tombstone, where the night before, one of Wyatt Earp's brothers is shot and killed. And the next day, his older brother is taking a wagon train kind of out of town, leaving the Cowboys and Curly Bill and all those guys behind. And they say a little something and they stop in front of Curly Bill, and Curly Bill just goes, well, bye. And that's kind of what I was, the Sankey attitude was for me. Me towards Sankey was a little bit like that. Like, okay, we'll see. I think that they could do it. I think their constituency would be okay with it. But I think it's not very realistic, and I think it's a lot of saber rattling. I think Petitti went up there yesterday with a Curly Bill Brocious attitude about him. And it was kind of like, yeah, we kind of got the answers to the test. I mean, he stood there in the press conference with the three national championships won the last 3 years standing next to him. It's a pretty good flex.
It helps.
Kind of like, hey, we're going to be fine. We've got this whole thing figured out. Now, his conference has got a bunch of questions. He's got a bunch of questions. He didn't answer a lot of them, but he did not step all over himself as he did a year ago. He was much more confident than he was a year ago. He was much more open to compromise than he was a year ago. To me, as far as Tony Petitti's concerned, this may have been his best one of these. And he doesn't do this very often. He does it here, and then he does it. Usually you'll get him at the Big Ten meetings when they do that, but that's a pretty smaller assembled group of media. I thought he seemed like he kind of had the answers to the test. It wasn't a home run. It wasn't some of the best things that we've seen from conference commissioners. It wasn't follow me to freedom, Braveheart style. It wasn't any of that, but it was measured. It seemed a little bit omniscient from his perspective in terms of where this was going, while still humble enough to understand that we're in a time in the sport where nobody truly has the answers. All of this while this congressional committee is trying to hammer down a 9 o'clock deadline today for the SEC and the Big Ten to say, yeah, you can go with the Save College Sports Act. By the way, both the SEC and the Big Ten were like, yeah, we're good. This isn't it. We're not going to give you an answer by 9 a.m. on that. So with all of that as the backdrop and needing leadership, and I think a specific type of leadership, I thought Tony Petitti had a pretty good day yesterday leading the Big Ten.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what you look for and want if you're an athletic director or decision maker in the Big Ten Conference, and that's the guy you've hired to represent your not only your brand, but to seek more streams of revenue, because he, I think, encompassed all of that. It was interesting to see from Brett McMurphy, who I guess his thing over media days is to clock the commissioners and how many words they're using. 738 yesterday for Tony Petitti in his opening statement. That's about, if my math's right, that's less than half of Brett Yormark, who did 1,700 words, 2,600 for Jim Phillips, and 2,800 for Greg Sankey in the SEC. So
I didn't see that, Reese, but that proves the point, doesn't it?
Right. To his credit, it's here's our statement, but I'll take your questions. And he didn't shy away from anything, even spicy Tim May. And we'll hear Tony's answer from Tim May, who asked him, is it really the best, I'll paraphrase what Tim May said, is it the best idea to rely on Congress to change this thing?
The great Tim May.
I mean, it was all there, and I think Tony took it in stride.
When the camera can pan just to your left a little bit, or to his right, I guess, left from how we're looking,
yeah,
and you see those three national championship trophies, you don't have to talk a lot. You don't have to talk about, well, we've got 80,000 in every stadium every Saturday. That's why we're the best. You don't have to say, hey, you know what? Our 9-3 is better than your 11-1. The proof is right there next to you. So you don't have to go up there and bloviate for yourself. I do love, though, that he talked about, and this was in his questions, but I do love that he said, our football conference is deep, and it's proven because when our teams get to the playoff, they're ready. They wouldn't be ready if they were playing patsies and cupcakes all the time. In the past 3 years, the Big Ten has won the national championship in football. So that is, and it's, I don't know if we talk about that enough, that these Big Ten teams are ready. We talk a lot about Indiana, and they had a soft schedule. We've even talked a little bit about Ohio State and their non-conference the year they won. But these teams are getting tested in conference, and it's getting them ready for a college football playoff. And I'm glad that Petitti went up there, and while he wasn't, you know, real, he didn't elaborate on it, but he did say, look, our conference is good enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean. It was really what it was, the Curly Bill Brocious attitude of like, bye, like, fine, we're good. And I think it's a, you guys both made some really good points. The three national titles, he also talked about 8-2 in the postseason against the SEC. So he was ready for that stuff. If he was going to be asked about it, he's ready for it. So he had the 8-2 against the SEC in the postseason the last 3 years. He had three national titles. I mean, he's coming from a position of incredible power on this thing. And I thought that he kind of handled himself that way, Reese. And that's a great job out of you finding the McMurphy bit, because that tells the whole tale, doesn't it? Sankey is trying to, having not won a national championship, having not competed for a national championship in 3 years, he's trying to, with words, tell you that they are still as important as they are. And by the way, we all know they are. We see the audience they get. We know the attention that they get. We know the quality of the football teams. They haven't been competitive the last 3 years at the very top of the sport, but that does not mean that it's not a great conference, and these two conferences aren't going to run it. Sankey just has to tell you about it. Petitti didn't. He got to stand there in front of three national championships and show you. And he's negotiating publicly from an incredible position of strength. Quite frankly, they both are. And if you're looking for proof of that, the U.S., that group, Ted Cruz and whoever else was on that thing, gave him a deadline at 9 a.m. this morning to say, hey, you need to approve this or this is it. And the Big Ten and the SEC said, yeah, we're not going to approve it. We're not going to, because this ain't it. And this is not in our best interest. That's how powerful they are at the moment. You're going to hear from Tony Petitti on a great number of things. I'll tell you what, some of these coaches at the Big Ten yesterday had some fun, too. I'll get you set for the Buckeyes appearance later on this afternoon. We're off and running on a First Friday edition. Bishop and Friends, right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service, because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FIRST.
How many men signed the Declaration of Independence?
5.
I'll go 6.
I mean, if you add 50, you're correct. It's 56. 56?
Really?
Rothman and Ice. Weekdays at noon.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus.
The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Ran out a good deal of sunshine for the rest of the day. Nice humidity levels and a little breeze from the north from time to time. Highs climb to right around 80 or so. Overnight, mainly clear skies, 59. For your Thursday, a lot of sunshine once again. Still nice out there with highs near 83. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The best facial hair on the air. This is Bishop and Friends.
Ohio State fans, get your first look at the 2026 Buckeyes. Join us August 6th through the 8th at the Woody Hayes Athletic Center, Ohio State Football Training Camp. It's presented by Safelite, Bob's Discount Furniture. Watch practice live, get autographs, take photos with select players, experience the start of a new season up close. Tickets are limited. They're going fast. Just $48 for general admission. Upgrade to VIP for shaded seating, refreshments, and more. Secure your spot today at OhioStateBuckeyes.com. Don't miss your chance to be part of a Buckeye Nation's kickoff to 2026. We've been there every year. We're going to be there this year as well. This is pretty cool. I mean, just think, this is like it's an NFL training camp is what it is. And the proximity that you will get to these guys is better than any you're going to get all season long. So it is a very cool thing. And one of the things that I look forward to every year, getting out there and getting our first look at these guys as they strap on the pads for the first time in 2026. Tony Petitti was at the podium yesterday over in Chicago. He trumped, we mentioned this in regard to like the national championships and the record. One of the things that he's got to do this a little bit, was he did talk about the depth of the Big Ten. Here he is, a little saber rattling of his own.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into like who's better or not. Well, I will say something I think that gets overlooked in our conference a lot. You cannot send your top teams out into the CFP unless they play and have them be successful, which we have been very successful, if they're not going through a gauntlet in the regular season. You know, this idea that the middle of our conference isn't hard is just not right. Like, at the end of the day, our teams are ready for the CFP. Our travel looks like the CFP travel. You're going all over the country. How we play, the difficulty in the road in the Big Ten, I just think that's overlooked. The reason why we've been so successful is our teams are prepared. You know, the best teams in any given season play each other. That's great. That prepares them. But you also get through a lot of really difficult games. You cannot just be ready to go play in the postseason after you think you've played something easy. It just doesn't happen. And so I think that's kind of something that gets overlooked in our league. We have a really difficult league. It's tough to win on the road in the Big Ten for even the best teams.
I think the one thing that I would say, and I think we've said this before, but it bears repeating, the Big Ten is actually set up perfectly for its teams to compete in the college football playoff. It's almost perfectly constructed, because he mentioned the travel, which I don't know if there's any real juice in that in terms of getting anybody ready. But one thing that the Big Ten has is really all three tiers in its conference. It's got the elite tier. These four or five, six teams can go win a national title, sometimes three or four, maybe sometimes it stretches to five or six. Then it's got this middle tier that are competitive, and you, if they come into your place, it can be a four-quarter game, like the game that I took the family to 2 years ago when Nebraska came here with Riola, and that ended up being a four-quarter game. Pretty talented, and they have your attention games. They've got probably six or eight of those, and then they've got some garbage at the bottom. And so you get kind of those non-conference-ish games with Rutgers and Purdue and those type of games where you can just cruise, and your guys are in the, your best players are chilling by the time you get to the third and fourth, late third, early fourth quarter. So in a way, the Big Ten is perfectly constructed for an expanded playoff. It's perfectly constructed for a 12-team playoff.
And that's, we lament Ohio State's happy attitude, or their good partnership with the Big Ten, because we sometimes sit here and go, you know, the Big Ten's dealing with the big noon burden. And yeah. Ohio State's got to deal with Rutgers and UCLA and all of these unserious humans and unserious programs that can't spend money correctly, or I guess spend it as soon as they get it. And it's days like yesterday that kind of give at least me a little pause and say, this is what it looks like when everybody's on the same page. This is what it sounds like when everybody's on the same page. It's a great credit to what Ohio State, to what Indiana, to what everybody in the conference is doing in rowing in the same direction. Because through three seasons, and with your conference commissioner coming out while there's so much chaos, to your point about the Big Ten being in the best spot of any of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I got into this last week when the SEC was going off about, well, if we would have just lost to Georgia and Florida, 4-8 Florida, you know, we would have been okay, and they're 9-3, yada, yada. The Big Ten last year had USC, Michigan, Iowa, Washington, and Illinois that were all 9-4.
Yep.
And a lot of those teams were pretty good football teams. You know what else they had that I don't think anybody would have had? Minnesota was 8-5. Like, Minnesota wasn't a bad football team.
No.
So the SEC can talk about, well, top to bottom. And, you know, I don't know about that. Maybe their teams in their bottom third are better than the Big Ten's bottom third.
Maybe.
Who knows? But 4-8 Florida, you bring them to the Big Ten, they're not going to be much better than they were.
No, and I think that the reason the SEC gets away with that is because with teams like Florida and Auburn especially, and there's some other ones that have been close, we all remember them winning national titles. I mean, those teams have won national titles in the last 25 years. And so, and they've played, Auburn's played for it twice, won one, Florida's won two. So the, because of that, they're resting on their past and what those, what greatness those past programs represented. They are not there anymore. Florida's been a mess for, since Urban left, really. Auburn's not much better, quite honestly. So that's the deal, and they're relying on that brand equity that they built up in the 2000s and 2010s, and it's just not there anymore. But that's how they get away with it. This will be an SEC versus Big Ten thing. It needs to be the two of them working together on all of it. Here was Tony Petitti's stance on college football expansion in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I'll say about, you know, working with the SEC on the playoff and working with Greg specifically, you know, I've never heard him say
that he won't do the work and consider 24. I mean, he's been public about certain preferences he has, but he's committed himself to doing the work around all formats. And we've done the same thing. We have strong opinions about where the right path is. I think there's been an evolution since we were here last year about how people feel about 24 at this point. And we've made adjustments in our league. We were focused on automatic qualifiers. We're not focused on that anymore. We're looking at, you know, the committee picking the field to 24. We feel that that ultimately will still unlock the power of scheduling that we want. So we work every day with it. I think the path is, you know, you've got to be able to do this in a way that allows you to not play championship games. There's obviously significant economic value in our championship games across the P4. And so we've got to understand where that is. And if we can find the value, then I think it just changes the tone of the conversations. But it's been completely collaborative. And even though the memo gives the SEC and the Big Ten more, you know, the operating decision-making in this process, we've really included, you know, on a daily basis, our colleagues in the ACC, the Big 12, and everybody else in the CFP room. We're trying to do this together. I think there's been a lot of movement among coaches and ADs around the country that 24 is the right number. But we've got to see if it has the right value, and we've got to understand that process and how we schedule it and when.
So his 24 is all around getting an extra bit of inventory to replace the Big Ten championship game. That's really what it's about. And what he's willing to give up on is the automatic qualifiers, which we said a year ago, you don't need those. You're the Big Ten. You're going to be fine. You don't need to worry about making sure you have six teams in automatically. Don't negotiate this from a position of weakness. Negotiate it from a position of strength. And to me, it seems like they've at least come around a little bit on that. I still hate 24. I think it's nonsense. 16 is as high as I could go. And honestly, I'd like to go backwards and go to 8, but I know that that's not going to happen either. 24 just seems nonsensical to me, and I hope that someone can talk them off the ledge on it. But as long as you're chasing the money, that's probably not going to be the case.
Two things can be true. We can hate all this yeah. expansion and how he says content and inventory and how he's constantly looking for the next thing to slap an advertisement on and acknowledge that's his job, and he's done a hell of it. He's done a hell of a good job so far. And as much as I've railed on, you know, his, we put him on a milk carton for like two straight summers.
Two years.
Where is this conference commissioner?
It's nowhere.
And for him to come out now, and I think what is his third football season, an outstanding job from the asks that are of him from his employee, from the people that employ him, which are the Big Ten, which is Ross Bjork, Big Ten conference athletic directors and administrators. It's a radical, he's got an appreciation and understanding for where everything's going, and he wants to be at the forefront of it. That's the job. So far, so good.
Yeah, this was a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Because the Big Ten's got to lead this for the schools in the Big Ten and the schools that we care about and root for to have success going forward, or the
Absolutely.
Most success of anybody.
Absolutely. I want to get to this one really quick. Challenges facing the Big Ten the next 5 years. Go ahead.
Yeah, again, I think we addressed this a few minutes ago. I think when I talk to Greg and what they're trying to do, I think there's just an incredible effort to get this bill right. And that's all about staying together. Like, getting this bill right is all about staying together in the system we have. I think the second path is going to be, if we can't get the bill, can we come up with a system that improves CSE? And I think all that work is also going to be doing it together. Look, if those things don't happen, I think every league is going to be in the position to say, what are we going to do that's better than what we have now? And do we have to do it ourselves? And again, I think, like, breakaway is just like, you know, it's a word that creates a lot of emotion. Like, it's not, I've never heard that anybody doesn't want to play anybody else. Like, we want to schedule more good games against the, you know, that our fans expect. We just got to get to a system that allows us to do that. So I know, like, to be fair, like, after his comments, I know the last couple of days where he addressed it, it seemed like he was sort of pointing out that maybe the reaction to it wasn't quite what he meant.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Kirby meant what he meant, and I think what they want down there is a set of rules that allows them to get back to the top of the sport, because they don't have the financial might in this world that they had in the previous world. It's pretty much that simple. Those two conferences, whatever happens in sport, though, they're going to be the ones that decide it. We had some color from some coaches as well. Luke Fickell at Wisconsin, Brett Bielema. God, it's great to have him back. Great to have him back. He had a great one on the SEC. The Zingers were flying. Lincoln Riley a little bit more confident. And what do we expect out of the Buckeyes today at Media Day in Chicago? We get to all of that in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up with you?
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. Buckeyes over in Chicago, Big Ten Media Days today. We think it is sometime in the noon hour here locally. We've seen various reporting of when it would be, whether it's 12:15, 12:30, or noon right out of the gates. We'll see where all of this goes. Do you have some clarification, Reese?
No, I was just going to say, if you want to hear from Ryan Day, do not stop listening to The Fan or watching The Fan's YouTube all day.
Yeah, so one way or another, we'll have it. Whenever it is. We're mobile, we have top men on it, and we're going to get it locked down. Ryan's over there, Jalen McClain's over there, Julian Sands over there, and Jeremiah Smith is over there as well. Yesterday, so they're splitting this up into 3 days, and they kind of do it pretty smart in this sense, where they have a couple of headliners for each day, so a couple of big-time programs each day. So the Buckeyes will go today, Michigan will go on Thursday. Is Oregon with us today, or are they tomorrow? They're either today or tomorrow, so they spread it out where so that there's a little bit of juice on every single day. So
it looks like Dan Lanning's about a half hour. Actually, I guess that would be 15 minutes after.
What is a schedule? He's scheduled for today.
Half hour
today?
After Ryan Day.
Dan
half
Lanning
hour.
Will go so after Ryan today. Day.
Yeah, at some point today. And my guess is a station in Portland will carry that. We will not, but we will carry Ryan. So that's how that's going to go. Yesterday, you had Illinois, you had Wisconsin, you had USC, you had Penn State. So a lot to get to from these guys, and I'll be very candid with you. Illinois isn't exactly Indiana for me, but it's close. And Bielema there is a pretty damn good thing, and he's done a really good job there. I've often said I wish he was at a bigger place because he's one of my favorite adversarial Buckeye coaches when he's kind of punching at your weight level, and he kind of was a little bit when he was at Wisconsin. He's not fearful of saying anything. He's completely direct. He's a lot of fun. The reality, and it's funny, it was me and Tim May and Dom and Moose, Tim Flaherty, a bunch of other guys from Channel 10. We were sitting outside the Rose Bowl, and Bielema walked by with his then-girlfriend, I think he's still married to, wife, and he just wanted to see the Rose Bowl. This was after Ohio State played Oregon in the Rose Bowl when Pryor had his best game as a Buckeye, and Bielema just had a chat with all of us for like 15 minutes, like really likable dude. So he was available yesterday. He was asked about the SEC and the idea of breaking away. And of course, that's putting a ball on a tee and teeing it very, very high for John Daly is what this is. Here's Brett Bielema.
To see the growth of this league to get to where we are now. I spent a couple of years in the SEC, was with Slive, and then transitioned to Sankey. And I just think about it now, everybody's going to have, you know, opinions, and obviously they're going to draw the Big Ten SEC and all that goes around about that. But to sit in the room with both of those guys, I think with Tony and the vision and experience that he has, and to be in the room where Sankey, I know he's got to protect the SEC and they kind of want to live in 2005 forever, but I think the forward thinking of where we are in college football is an awesome thing.
So great. Just gets that in there. 2005 forever. Also had this to say about anything in the past three seasons. It's a different world.
The two biggest things, the biggest components are the transfer portal and revenue share, or NIL, however you want to describe it. When those two elements came into college football, the whole world changed. I mean, it's overly obvious to say that, but I think anything to predate that, it's just a different time in college football. It just is. It's a different world, man. The last 3 years, like the quarterback I have now, we would not have gotten if the world was existed 5 years ago. I know that. Neither would my left tackle, my left guard, my center, and my right tackle wouldn't be here playing for me. Right? And you go around to every team, and the rosters have changed because of those two components, the transfer rule and revenue share. It's a different world. Anything beyond that is nonsense.
This goes back to the old Civil War analogy I did a couple of years ago about how the North was never going to lose that war because we always had the industrial might. So there are some schools in the South that have oil money, but there's a bunch of schools up here that have a lot of money. And all you have to do is look at the endowments of these various schools up here, and all you need, and by the way, there's some pretty wealthy people who are alumnus of Illinois, not just Fish, others. And the reality is that they're ready to throw some money around. I mean, Sean Conn went to Illinois. The guys behind the Hyatt company went to Illinois. They're ready and they're mobilized. We saw this at Indiana. We think at some point we're going to see it at Michigan State. Like, there's a lot of folks up here with a lot of money that want their football programs being elite, Vic.
And you were talking about Florida.
Yeah.
And Auburn, like, we remember those teams winning national championships. And that's what he was talking about. He was like, the history of college football is short now in this college football era. Yep. So you can't look at things 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and say this is how it is because it's changed so rapidly.
100%. 100% it has. So this, I think this is the first one. Luke Fickell's in an interesting spot at Wisconsin. We all feel that there's a lot of pressure. This was probably the most candid I've ever heard Fick about what it's been like at Wisconsin and what he thinks it can be like now. I'm a little dubious to think that it actually can be that, but here's Fick.
Over the last 9 months, there's been a hell of a lot of changes. And to the naked eye and to the fan, I don't know that you could see them all. But to the people from within the program, meaning the players, the coaches, the people that are really close to this team, have seen and felt a difference throughout this entire program. And I'm standing here today in a lot different place than I was in the last 3 years. And I really do mean that. Now, I don't have all the answers, and I'm not saying that we're someplace far off from where we have been. But what we are much different in is our leadership. And about 9 months ago, midway through a season, there were some things that started to happen, and we could have gone one direction or the other, and we were in a really tough situation. But there was some youth within our program that really kind of really started to grow and took over in a way that was really, really healthy for us. And we had a group of veteran leaders that kind of understood what was happening and saw it and embraced that as well. And it's really, over the last 9 months, put us in a position that is far, far different than we ever have been since I've been here.
So when you say things like that, my hunch would be, well, you better at least do what you did in your first full season, which was go 7-6. Because he went 7-6 year one, 5-7, 4-8. Like, we love Luke around here. I don't know if he read the brochure on what he was getting into in Wisconsin, or much like what Bielan was saying about the SEC, if he thought this was Wisconsin from 2007, 8, 9, because it ain't. It's not that anymore. Hasn't been that in a long time. Does he have, leads me to believe that he's got some things behind him going, but you look at the roster and you don't really see it. I don't see it. So, when we did our thing, I definitely picked them in the back half. When I did the thing for Doug, I picked him in the back half of the Big Ten and probably more even in the bottom third of the Big Ten. I just don't see it. So my hunch is he needs to probably be around 500 or a little better to maintain his position up there, but at least he came across like he's pleased with where they're at with things. That's about the best you can hope for there.
Yeah, I look at their schedule and I go, they might just be 500 coming out of the month of September. Because yeah, it's Notre Dame is the first game that they've got this season. And, you know, for the three seasons he's been there, the quarterback's been this biggest issue where they've gone to the transfer. I mean, I know he kind of created some bad luck changing the identity of Wisconsin football. But when you bring in a quarterback from the transfer portal consecutive seasons, you expect that guy to contribute right away. And if he doesn't, then didn't feel like he had a backup plan.
No, the guys got hurt and he was cooked.
I think it's the hardest thing in this transfer portal era when a new coach comes in is you have all that roster turnover and you have no foundation anymore. And I think where that really hurts you is the leadership aspect. And it takes a while to build that up, unless you're a guy like Kurt Cignetti who brings a bunch of guys from your team with you.
Yeah.
I think that's just really hard to do. Or you're Deion Sanders and you bring two talented people like Shador Sanders and Travis Hunter, two guys that are in the NFL now.
Yeah.
Those kind of things help, but you got to have some guys that know your system and can help you be a leader and a coach in that locker room. And I think it's the hardest thing in this transfer portal era.
Was when Luke got hired there, was that before completely free transfer? Because why didn't he take more Cincinnati kids with him?
I think it was before.
Was it just right before
let you do it?
It's either right before. I don't know. I mean, this is his.
And it might have been the timing, too. The timing could have been bad.
Yeah, this is his fourth year, and this is Deion's fourth year at Colorado. So theoretically, I wonder why he didn't bring more Cincinnati kids with him. All right, coming up next, I do want to hear from Matt Campbell. So we're going to hear from Matt Campbell. His first Big Ten media days as the Penn State head coach in terms of what his plan is in Happy Valley. We have NFL teams, first practices, and a former Buckeye gets paid. We get to all of that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah. They've been around a while.
Call 1-800.
feel that? The season is getting closer.
Buckeye football comes your way in 38 days. Every game.
Every season.
Proud to be your flagship home for Ohio State football.
The Fan.
Ohio sports destination.
All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. When General Sherman marched through Georgia, he was listening to this show.
Use your skills for good, young warrior.
This is Bishop and Friends.
And homes in Columbus under constant attack by pests like termites, ants, or mice. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and family with Rose Home Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection, one flat annual fee, regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. And we have Mr. Ward with an update from Chicago, I believe.
Yeah, Austin Ward has texted and said 1:15 our time, Ryan Day will be taking the podium today.
1:15 Eastern.
Yeah, which is what the Big Ten on their website has. That's what they say. So Austin Ward confirms.
It's funny when you tell people, like I was in Montana last week, and you tell people that they all assume Ohio's on Central Time because we're in the Midwest. I'm like, I was farther east in Tallahassee.
The heart of it all.
Here. Yeah, the heart of it all, brother, certainly is. Matt Campbell has had his Big Ten Media Days debut as the head coach at Penn State. You look at their schedule and you look at that Iowa State influx of talent and you say, boy, they should have a pretty good jumping off point for year one for Mr. Campbell. Here is Matt on how he attempts to attack the Penn State job.
As the values outside of the game of football continue to change, winning football games hasn't wavered. How you win on the field, and quite honestly, what's not going to waver is my belief system on how you build a football program and how you create a transformational journey in this journey. I still believe it's my responsibility to take young men to men, build great fathers, great husbands, great leaders. That's still my responsibility and one that I look forward to. At Penn State, we choose a culture to do what is hard rather than what is easy. And we want people who want something more than just winning football games. We've built a staff and a process here to reach its full potential. And I couldn't be prouder of our coaching staff. I couldn't be prouder of our performance team to build the process moving ourselves forward.
So he either read that or he memorized it, right? One of the two.
So, I mean, it's a good speech.
Yeah, so he shouldn't have done that. He shouldn't have read it or memorized it. He should have just talked. He knows all those things. He has talking points. He doesn't need to read them. I think you could make a pretty straightforward argument that he enters the Penn State situation very similarly to the way Cignetti opened his Indiana campaign. The schedule is Charmin tissue soft. He brought in a ton of Iowa State guys with him. Now, they didn't do a whole lot in the portal, weren't able to do anything in recruiting because he got there so late. But in terms of who stayed and the Iowa State guys coming in and the schedule, it's hard to... Did you guys do Penn State last week? It's hard for me to find a way where they're worse than 9-3.
No, right? they weren't on the docket last week.
So they'll be next week. I don't see how they're not 9-3. The schedule is just so soft. And he's a really good coach, and he brought those Iowa State guys with him. So he's going to be able to set the tone about what they're going to be, and then he's going to be able to, in year two, in the portal and in recruiting, he's going to be able to sell that success.
Felt like a lot with Campbell yesterday was he's recruiting Penn State, like alumni, donors, the old guard of Penn State, that he's obviously going to need their support, them to open their checkbooks and to donate to the program. And that's his job right now. Mm-hmm. He's got players already that have buy-in to him, that believe in him as a coach, because he coached him at Iowa State, so there's the familiarity there. Ames is an outpost, so that he's able to bring talent there and have them produce and be competitive. He's got all that already. But Penn State, as we know, is just different. And I don't know if difference, I don't know if I say different in a good way, but it felt where he's reading that statement, and a couple of the other things that he said was, I've got to make sure that people believe that I believe in we are. Like, he gets up and he hits that sign in his bathroom every morning. We are. Yes. I love Penn State. I love being here. Because he wasn't their first choice either.
No.
the schedule's ridiculous this year.
So easy.
And we just talked about in the transfer portal era, you've got to bring a lot of guys. He brought a lot of guys, including his quarterback.
Yep.
And that helps. I want Matt Campbell to do well at Penn State. He's an Ohio guy. He's around my age. He went to Mount Union. He's part of that Mount Union coaching tree. Yep. I love following those guys as they've gone all around the sport of football. I just think it's James Franklin at best. I really do.
And maybe bake that's okay. Maybe that's what Penn State is at their best.
Yeah, but they don't think so, though, because they
shipped
off Franklin.
Of them. You're right. I mean, some of them don't. Some of them don't think so, certainly. But I think some of them do. And I think here's the difference between Matt Campbell at Iowa State and James Franklin at Penn State. Matt Campbell at Iowa State beat Iowa from time to time. He won big games from time to time. He would lose to some teams that maybe were lesser, but he also punched up a little bit. Franklin never punched up. He beat who he was supposed to and lost who he was supposed to. And that's what drove him nuts. I think a lot of James Franklin's, the last part of his tenure there, it wasn't that people were like, oh, you know, 10-2 isn't good enough. It's 10-2 is fine, but every once in a while beat Ohio State. Every once in a while beat Michigan. And I think that's what he didn't do.
I know that's a big game for them, but beating Iowa isn't beating Ohio State.
It's not, but it is the same if you're Iowa State, because Iowa State isn't Penn State. You know what I mean? Like, those comparatives are the same in terms. In fact, I would argue that Penn State's in a better position to beat Ohio State than Iowa State should be to beat Iowa. But that's the job that he's got to do, and how it's got to be a little bit better. We've got NFL camps opening today. The Browns go at 1 o'clock today. Yesterday afternoon, late in the afternoon, they announced an extension with our guy, Denzel Ward, the 5-time Pro Bowl corner, agreeing on a 2-year, $62.2 million deal, $52.3 guaranteed. $31 million average makes Ward the highest paid defensive back in the NFL for the second time in his career. The only other thing that they got to get done is Grant Delpit. They got to get him an extension. Once they get that done, then they'll be all good on everything in regard to starting the season. I think it was important to get this done before the start of camp. Denzel was basically, he was kind of a hold in a little bit in mini camp, like he was out there, but not all the way out there. And Delpit was kind of in the same spot. So they get those two extensions done, and that'll be a good thing. Obviously, I'll be curious, and I'll be there this afternoon, get a good look and see what they do with the quarterbacks and how Monken manages that, because all of that's going to matter. And have a chance to talk to Todd later on this afternoon. I'm curious what his plan is for training camp with the two quarterbacks. Speaking of Buckeyes, yesterday, what did we get? About 3 hours? And we said this on the show. I wonder what Notre Dame's worth.
Yeah, it
turns out a little bit more.
Didn't take long.
No. I think I even mentioned Pete Sampson's tweet where he's like, you got to think Notre Dame is thinking this. Well, they were. A couple hours later, after Ohio State announced the $17 million annual fee for the Chase badge to be on all Buckeye jerseys across all 36 sports, and Notre Dame announced that they had signed a jersey patch sponsorship deal with SoFi worth $18 to $20 million annually is the number on that. So that trumps the number that we got. Much like our deal, it's a brand that you'd be very happy being associated with. This was inevitable, but I got to be honest with you guys, and I know we're up against it a little bit. I think these numbers are a little low.
Well, just because they're the first of their kind.
Right?
When this gets renegotiated, then it's, I don't know, double, but significantly more.
I think so, too.
They've got no precedent for any of this, and certainly
no, they're just making it up.
It is just made up. Negotiations had to have been fascinating with this, because you have no precedent. You have nothing to back this up against. You have
nothing.
Well, put the patch on your jersey, and here's our offer.
Mm-hmm.
Is this going to be a thing like with Denzel Ward? Like, well, we got to make him the highest paid cornerback. We just have to. And like, so this is the new deal. So
no, because there's no production with the jersey patch.
Yeah, but Notre Dame, like, well, if they got 17, we feel like we're worth more. We need 18. Like, I don't, because Notre Dame doesn't have as many sports as Ohio State. And Notre Dame, sure, they're on NBC an awful lot, but I don't think they're in as many big-time eyeball games as Ohio State is in football, so it doesn't seem like they should be getting more money than Ohio State.
Notre Dame may have, for some, I gotta be careful choosing my words here, a higher association with elitism beyond sports, academically, like all of it. You know, there is an elite feeling around Notre Dame, all of it. So like maybe that's how they got a little bit more. Real quick, don't even think about it. If you have $20 million to spend as a company, would you rather have it be spent on Ohio State, Notre Dame, or the entire Big 12 conference? What's your biggest bang for the buck?
I would say Ohio State.
Ohio State, Notre Dame, Big 12.
Yeah, in that order.
Yeah.
I'm not giving the Big 12 any money.
No, but like you get the whole conference. You get all of them. I mean, that's all of those eyeballs. It ends up being a lot, especially when you consider basketball and everything else. It ends up being a lot. Makes you think the Big 12 deal ended up being a steal for Monster Energy, quite honestly. All right. It is second hour of the program. We kick it off with a little Hey Guys that is coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE. Live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Day 2 of 3 of Big Ten Media Days in Chicago. Ohio State's Ryan Day will meet with the media on Wednesday. He's scheduled to take the podium this afternoon around 1:15. Julian Sain, Jeremiah Smith, and Jalen McClain will also speak with reporters today. In the NFL, the Browns made Denzel Ward the highest-paid DB for the second time in his career. Both sides agreed to a two-year, $62.2 million deal with $52.3 of that fully guaranteed. The 29-year-old Ward was named to his fifth Pro Bowl in 2025. The 2026 preseason begins next Thursday with the Hall of Fame game in Canton. Both Ohio NFL squads are on the field for their first training camp practice today. They'll both hold their first preseason game in 2 weeks. In football, The Athletic is reporting the U.S. men's national team has reached an agreement with Mauricio Pochettino to manage Team USA through the 2030 World Cup. And in baseball, the Reds and Guardians split a doubleheader Tuesday. They'll do it again tonight at 7:10. You can hear that game following the Buckeye Show on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Reeser's mustache is so nice, it has its own area code.
You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour on a first Friday. Jake Trotter coming up in 28 minutes from now. Tomorrow at this time, we will be opening up that mailbag. Feel free to email your questions to us. We'll get to those tomorrow at this time. For now at this time, though, time for a little Hey Guys. Hit it, fellas.
Nothing is off limits. Your participation is required. Just use the hashtag Hey Guys and ask anything you want. Do it now.
Sponsored by Rose Pest Solutions.
We'll start with Cardinal in the YouTube chat. Hey, guys, true or false, the 2027 NFL draft will tie or break the record for first-round quarterbacks. Current high is 6.
Current high is 6?
6 first-round quarterbacks.
All right. I don't think it will. I don't think it will. I think that some of these guys, I mean, would it shock you if Arch Manning played a third year at Texas?
No.
It wouldn't shock me. Like, if he didn't love the destination that was drafting at number one overall, he's making over $6 million playing at Texas. Like, it wouldn't floor me if he did that. I expect him to come out, and Dante Moore is going to come out, and, you know, there's going to be Lenora Sellers and Mastmaker, and I'm assuming Sayan and a bunch of others, but I'm going to say no. I could see it tying it, but I don't think it will break 6. I don't think you're going to have 7 first-round quarterbacks next year.
I don't think you're going to have 7 either, especially I don't think Sorsby's going in the first round now.
True.
So, and this draft has too many other good players. You've got a Jeremiah Smith, a Colin Simmons, a Leonard Moore. This is a generational draft, not just because of the quarterbacks, but because of all the other players as well. So I don't believe that you'll get there. I think you'll probably get 4 or 5 in the first round, but you're not getting to 7, especially now that Sorsby's had what he's had go on.
This from Snagglepuss on Twitter at 971BFS. Hey guys, you know how smoke alarms will start chirping when a battery needs charged? Is it me, or do they only begin chirping on a Sunday at 11:30 in the evening or at 4:30 in the morning?
Only then.
The worst
Only
times.
Then.
Yeah.
I've never had one start beeping at 2:00 in the afternoon. Never. In life. This was a fatal flaw when we built this house. In our bedroom, the ceilings are like 20 feet. It's like a vaulted 20-foot ceiling in our bedroom. And I think they had to do it because of code, but I cannot believe once the inspectors were out, I didn't have it removed. This sucker is 20 feet in the air. And I don't have a ladder that goes 20 feet up. Like, I need an Indiana Jones bullwhip to get up to this damn thing. And it is one of the great frustrations in my life, because I've had, we've been here 10 years, and on at least three different occasions, that battery, and I'll put like a lithium battery that's supposed to last forever. I got a handyman who's got a high ladder. I got to have him come over to change it. Like, I need this thing gone. And it only starts in the middle of the night, always, every time it's happened. So, no, only then.
It's never a convenient time, that's for
never.
Sure.
Never.
Radu in the YouTube chat asks, hey guys, should Eric have been in charge of the Cavs this offseason? They did nothing to improve.
He would have done better.
I'd have landed LeBron.
Then what happened?
When you saw it, I don't know if you have seen this, but there's a video of Shams Charania on Rich Paul's podcast saying that he met, saying that the Cavs ownership met with LeBron about a month ago, but he Shams didn't report it out of respect because it was an off-the-record meeting.
Let me ask you a question, Reese. Are you up to speed on House of Dragon?
Yeah.
So when I saw that clip, it was like Ormond Hightower at the end of the fracas at the table. Because it was like, I find all of that so gross. I find Rich going on with Kellerman so gross. I find it so gross they bring on Shams. And he's their little puppet, like, doing all of this stuff. I think the arrogance of him is gross. I have never been Boo LeBron guy because of what he did in 16. And I think even the decision, as awkward as it was, like, I get it. If you're in your early 20s, you can go play with your buddies and live in and make the same money and play for work for a better company and live in South Florida, you go do that. Everybody out there listening would do that. I don't know. It is what it is. I think you should have done it a different way, but okay, fine. This was something else, though. This was toying with a fan base again. This was playing golf all over Central Ohio, after Northeast Ohio. I had a buddy of mine tell me that the day after he made the decision to go to Philly, he played Pepper Pike, which is an elite club up there in Northeast Ohio. Like, it's just too much in their face, and it's just really disconnected from what that fan base and what he means to them. And the thinking you could just say Northeast Ohio is always home and they're always going to love you. Now, I think this one will sting pretty hard. Not quite like decision, but I think this one will have some long-term effects on that. I do think he'll be booed up there. I think you're going to have to wait a while for a jersey retirement up there. Guys, they would play like tribute videos to him even in the last couple of years when he would come back with the Lakers. All that stuff's done.
Reese, I can only imagine how it is being a Cavs fan right now. Because I get it's the same feeling as being a Blue Jackets fan, because you're just running it back and you know you're not quite good enough and you watch other teams around you get better. So I'm pretty sure that you and I have the same feeling. Well, the Cavs will be in the playoffs and they'll probably be a team that's dangerous and could win a series or two. Mm-hmm. They're just not quite good enough. And that's how I feel about the Blue Jackets right now, so I feel your pain.
I mean, it would be the ultimate thing if they get to the Eastern Conference semifinals and get swept by the Sixers.
Was there even... How do they not even have given consideration for that, Reese? Like, how does that play? Now he's competing with them in the East. Like, obviously he doesn't care at all about it, but it'll be... I think big damage was done with this, the way they handled it. They should have said right away, Reese. Imagine if they just come out and said, we're not signing in Cleveland, we've already done that. Like they did with the Knicks, when they said they won the championship so we can't go there. At that time, if they had just said, we're not signing in Cleveland, we've already done it, I think that's easier than stringing them along for a month.
Yeah, the 30 days of could he, will he, when he is pretty bad. So for Cleveland, for Akron, he'll always be beloved in that part of Northeast Ohio.
Right.
But in downtown Cleveland, when he comes back, in that Sixers uniform, there's going to be some vitriol there, and understandable vitriol from the fan base's perspective.
Yeah.
Real quick, Ace in the YouTube chat asks, hey guys, in honor of the State Fair and the famous Butter Cow, you can pick your three favorite celebrities or sports figures to be carved into butter statues. Which three would you want to see?
Well, so celebrities or sports figures... All right, so I'm going to go with ones that I would find entertaining. Like, I would find, and this is a deep cut, But, like, I would find Jerry Tarkanian chewing on a towel to be a funny one. Like, that would be a funny butter statue. I would like to see that. How about Bum Phillips in the cowboy hat? Let's go way back. Bum Phillips in the cowboy hat would be a win. How about Hank Stram, coach of the Kansas City Chiefs, in the suit with the lacquered hair? That would be a funny one. I'll go old school. I'll go those three guys. Those are the ones that popped to my head that I think would be funny in butter.
Give me Chris Farley.
Oh, that'd be great.
Give me old Magnum 44 himself, Eric the Red, Eric Davis.
Yep.
And give me Bernie Kosar. I'd like all three of those.
There's probably been a Kosar one, hasn't there?
Maybe. It could have been.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this year's themes, and it's America 250. There's a calf with a hat on.
Okay.
And they have a cow and an eagle. I don't see one for Bernie. Jack Nicklaus has been made. John Glenn, Urban Meyer.
Jim Tressel, I'm sure, has been made.
I don't see Tressel here, but I'm just looking at some of them.
Has to have done
Woody. I see Darth Vader. There's been one that's a tribute to the Ohio State Buckeyes. We'll look more in the break, but I'll give mine because I like to challenge these butter sculptors because it's incredible work that they do. I would want to see Macho Man either giving the elbow or holding up the creamer and doing that promo, or Jose Ramirez losing his helmet.
Those would all of those win.
What about Jose hitting Tim Anderson?
Also that with a falling down Tim Anderson, yeah.
What is your favorite fair food as a kid? What was your favorite fair food?
It's a funnel cake guy.
Yeah,
I mean, deep fried.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too messy.
I always enjoyed the elephant ears. I like the cinnamon part of that.
Yeah, those are pretty good. There was one at the Montana State Fair that the street taco guys were pretty good. And I don't know that they were street tacos any more than they were just like regular tacos. But for some reason, those hit, and I love the smell of them. You're right on the funnel cakes. But honestly, the thing that I had most at fairs growing up that I only ever have at fairs was cotton candy. Like, that was one that was just, that was only a fair staple, was the way that went. I love a state fair. Those are great. The Montana one actually is going on this week, too. Is it this week for us?
Yeah, I think it was yesterday was the
kickoff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it usually starts the last week of July and runs through the first couple weeks of August.
Today's the first official day. Our friends at Channel 10 got an exclusive preview yesterday.
Oh, there you go. Very, very exciting. We'll do a little higher, lower coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
And have created a show where you can be a homer, a hater, or whatever you want to be. Sunday mornings at 8.
It's the Fan Call-In Show, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Then a good deal of sunshine for the rest of the day. Nice humidity levels and a little breeze from the north from time to time. Highs climb to right around 80 or so. Overnight, mainly clear skies, 59. For your Thursday, a lot of sunshine once again. Still nice out there with highs near 83. For the Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is. We're proudly brought to you and sponsored by our friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 8 decades. Time for a little higher, lower on a first Friday. Hit it, Reese.
Bishop and Friends present Higher or Lower.
So all 32 NFL teams have begun training camp. Now the Browns and the Bengals have practices today. Cincinnati's out this morning. Cleveland this afternoon. The Bengals, Zach Taylor says, will put on the pads this coming Monday. The fine folk over at The Athletic have put together very nicely a pre-training camp NFL power rankings. Because why the hell not?
Yeah.
At number one, surprise to little, the Los Angeles Rams. They've got a fun last season, last ranking, what's new for the LA Rams. 12-5, last ranking was 5. What's new? Miles Garrett. Soon, yeah. Aaron Donald. The Denver Broncos are at 2. Higher or lower for Denver there?
It's too high for Denver. Do like that team a lot. Don't necessarily believe in Knicks to the point where they would be the number 2 overall. It's the right spot for the Rams. They added the McDuffie, too, the corner from Kansas City. They are... It almost makes the Simpson thing even more puzzling that they didn't add... Yeah, can you imagine if they would have added like Mekhi Lemon there to all this, which they could have? It's kind of crazy. This is as all in as I've seen an NFL team in a long time, and as all in to win it this year is the Rams. And maybe it's a 2-year window with Stafford and McVay. Who knows? But it's an all in as you're going to get. They're the appropriate number one. I would not have the Denver Broncos number 2. In fact, I would have last year's Super Bowl champions at number 2. I would have Seattle at number 2, and I would have Denver down this list a little bit. So definitely, to answer your question, lower for Denver.
Yeah, I don't understand how the Denver Broncos are number 2. I just can't get there with that team. I know they were good last year. I know Sean Payton's a good coach, and he seems to have a good rapport here with Bo Nix. I just don't think this is the number 2 roster in the NFL or the number 2 team. So I would have them significantly lower than 2.
At 3, you've got the Buffalo Bills. At 4, the New England Patriots. At 5, the defending Super Bowl champion Seattle Seahawks. At 6, the Houston Texans.
Oh, my gosh.
Higher or lower for Houston there?
Way lower. Way lower. I would put Denver, I think, in the 6th spot, and I would have Houston down another 4 or 5. Defensively, they are elite, and I love him, and he was great here. But C.J. Stroud's got a lot to prove this year in Houston. They still don't even have his extension done. So he's got a lot to prove to them as well. So I do not believe in Houston. To me, if you're in the top 6, you can go win the Super Bowl. The Houston Texans are not winning the Super Bowl. So I cannot have them this high. I would definitely have Houston lower on this list.
I like Houston more than you, Bo. I love the addition of David Montgomery. I think that helps their running game, which I think will help C.J. Stroud. They've got some injury concerns, I think, in their wide receiver room. It sounds like they're not too big. Their defense is really good. It's still a little high for me. I would drop them down a couple spots.
So after the Texans at 6, you've got the Niners at 7. 8, the Los Angeles Chargers. 9, the Eagles. At 10, the Detroit Lions. They say, what's new about Detroit? The vibes? Higher or lower for the Lions at 10?
All right, I have to backtrack a little bit. Baltimore's not in.
Nope.
Baltimore's not in here, and Cincinnati's not in here.
Correct.
And, okay. Bo, they're a lot lower. We're going to have to go a ways to find them.
You got to scroll a lot to find Baltimore.
Wow. Yeah, and Cincinnati's a lot better than some of these teams that are being mentioned here. So he's got the Bills 3rd, the Patriots 4, Eagles 5, Houston 6, Niners should be higher in 7. I know they play a brutal, brutal division, but that team is loaded. I think Mike Evans is going to be a stud for them. So I would have the Niners higher on this list. I like the Chargers more than Houston. I know you like Houston more than the Chargers, so I would have those two flopped a little bit. Eagles at 9 is about the right spot. I think this is a little too high for Detroit. I think Detroit had a window, and the window to be like a contender. I still think they're going to be fine. 10-7, 9-8, something like that. But I think this is too high for Detroit. I would bring them down a little bit, too.
I think this is probably about right for Detroit. I think the Eagles should be a little higher, though. I think this Eagles team is pretty good. So I know A.J. Brown's not there anymore, but that could be in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Maybe an addition by subtraction. I think the Eagles should be a fuzz higher.
At 11, the Jacksonville Jaguars. At 12, the Chicago Bears. 13, the Cowboys. 14, the Cincinnati Bengals. Higher or lower for Cincinnati on The Athletics preseason power rankings?
I'm really bullish on them. They're my favorite roster in the AFC. Like, I can't, and he says, what's new, Joe Burrow's healthy, ? Like, as it stands right now, they're all healthy. So I'm just judging Cincinnati on a fully healthy Cincinnati Bengals roster, and I would not trade their roster or circumstances, by the way, the 3rd easiest schedule in the NFL, I would not trade that with any team in the AFC. So I would have Cincinnati way higher, rocket ship higher. I'd have them in the top five. I think they have that good of a roster. All you can do is judge them on their healthy. You cannot predict injury on a team, even if there has been a history of it. So as they stand right now, they're completely healthy. To me, it's a top five roster. I wouldn't trade it for any in the AFC. Cincinnati's got to go way, way higher on this list. I like Chicago better than Detroit, too. I think it's a little too... I think Dallas is about in the sweet spot, but there's some teams ahead that are way too high. But I'm really bullish on Cincinnati.
Bo, same. I think Cincinnati has to be much higher than this. Almost, what? At least eight spots higher to me, maybe more.
For sure. Top five. I would only have that. I would have Rams, Seahawks, and then they're in the discussion at three for me. Cincinnati is.
The phrasing by The Athletic is, what's new? Joe Burrow is healthy? It's like, well, no, Joe Burrow is healthy. Like, this isn't, I'm Ron Burgundy. This is a Joe Burrow's healthy. So that's, I think, why we're bullish more so than The Athletic and their pre-training camp power rankings. At 15 on this list, the Green Bay Packers. 16 is the Baltimore Ravens. 17, the Pittsburgh Steelers. 18, the Kansas City Chiefs. Higher or lower for KC at 18?
All right, let's do Baltimore just for a second here, and then we'll get to Kansas City. I think Baltimore is going to take a step back from what they've been. Now, last year they were 8-9, but there were some injuries to Lamar. So even with a healthy Lamar, I think last year they're probably a 12-13 win team. Do you guys know which two teams in the NFL have the highest over-under win total as of yesterday?
Baltimore. Both are at 11.5.
You nailed it. It's Baltimore and Los Angeles. So this is going way against type. They're both at 11.5. I don't think Baltimore is a middle of the pack. Baltimore's got to go up four or five spots anyway. They're not going to be what they've been, but they're still going to win 10 games. So I would go up on Baltimore in a big, big way. The Kansas City at 18. So he's got Pittsburgh at 17. I think that's about right for them. Kansas City at 18. Like, they are a top 12 operation, provided Patrick Mahomes is upright. And honestly, none of us would ever bet against him ever because he's a wizard when he's healthy. So it's way too low for Kansas City as well.
Baltimore, I'm with you. They're going to take a step back. I don't think you can go from a coach like John Harbaugh to a first-time head coach. And Jesse Minter may end up being a really good coach. But in his first year, I think there's going to be some growing pains. But they're better than 16. I think Kansas City has a huge bounce back year this year. I really do. I think hopefully they get a full year of Rashee Rice and Xavier Worthy together. And Patrick Mahomes, it looks like he's on pace for week one. I just think they are going to have a chip on their shoulder that they haven't had for a long time, because everybody's counting them out. And they are on the downside of things in their run. But I just think they're going to come back and have a huge year. I love the addition of Kenneth Walker. That gives them kind of a game breaker in the backfield that they haven't had in a long time. I think Kansas City has to be way higher than 18.
At 19, you've got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. At 20, the Minnesota Vikings. 21, the Colts. 22, the Panthers. 23, the Washington Commanders. 24, the Falcons. 25, the New Orleans Saints. Scrolling down here past 26, the Las Vegas Raiders. At 27, the Cleveland Browns. Higher or lower for Cleveland at 27?
I think this is fair until you see where quarterback shakes. You know, I mean, they've won eight games the last 2 years. So they're going to be a lot better offensively with the weaponry that they have at receiver. I expect a massive season out of Quinshon Judkins. But this just all comes down to quarterback. And do they get quality quarterback play out of either Deshaun Watson or Shador Sanders? If they do, they'll be higher on this. But the over-under on them, because they play the weakest schedule, is 5.5, which is a pretty big number for a team that won eight total games the last 2 years and traded Myles Garrett.
I think the Browns roster is much better than 27, and I think with some kind of combination of Deshaun Watson and Shador Sanders, they will get better quarterback play than they've had. I think they've got to go up a couple spots. I think they're better than the Raiders. I think they're better than the Saints. I don't know about the Carolina Panthers. I don't know if they can do it again. Yeah. So I would have the Browns up a couple spots.
Yeah. It's going to be a very interesting season for them. And I think we're the only one that's this bullish on Cincinnati. Like, really robust on their situation, provided there's health. Jake Trotter in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Let me introduce you to a man with a magnificent salt and pepper beard.
A man who's currently roasting lamb on a spit.
A man who runs the Rocky River Greek Festival. That man is Jake Trotter.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Get 50% off all window styles plus no payments for 2 years. Visit windownation.com.
All right, we are efforting Mr. Trotter. I believe at this moment, Jake and I were in the same spot, just missed each other by a couple of days. He was out in northwest Montana on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation doing some volunteer work out there in Browning, Montana, I think a week before I got there. And I have to drive through that when I go on the eastern side of Glacier National Park to go to my dad's place. So I drove right through probably within maybe 48, 72 hours of when Jake was there. So we'll do a little bit of that and also get into his thoughts on Sankey last week and Petiti from yesterday. Buddy, good to talk to you. You and I were in the same place, I think about 72 hours apart, because you were in Browning, right? On the Blackfeet Indian Reservation?
I was in Browning like 10 days ago, I think.
Okay. And I was there like 7 days ago. On the way to my dad's. So I drove through on the way to my dad's. Did they still have all the teepees up? And was it Indian days? Is that what it was?
It was. Yeah.
Yeah.
So where were you in Montana?
So I was in way northwest Montana, other side of the mountains, north of Whitefish. And my dad lives probably about an hour and a half straight south of Browning on the Rocky Mountain front.
Wow.
So I go through there. Yeah, yeah. And it was cool. They had, they were doing, obviously, the Browning Indian Days. They had all the teepees out. And then they had that full herd of bison was right there. They call them buffalo, but the full herd of bison was there as well. Awesome work you do there, buddy. And they need the help, because there's some desperate stuff there.
Yep, no doubt. And got to, while I was there, go to Glacier National Park again and did the Road to the Sun, which should be on everyone's bucket list.
Does that not defy logic that that's in the United States? Like, it feels like the Swiss Alps.
So when you get to the top, the coolest part is you're just seeing wildlife that you never would see otherwise. I mean, I was right next to all these rams, you know, jumping around the mountains. We saw mountain goats, bears, bald eagles flying around. I mean, it's crazy.
And you're on top of the world. All you see is like tops of mountain peaks everywhere.
Yes.
And then running around on snow. When it's 80 degrees. Yeah, it's nuts.
Yes.
Speaking of nuts, we've had football's here, buddy. I guess we better be ready for it. We got NFL camp starting today. We've got college football media days. We had the SEC last week. A lot of saber rattling about, boy, we may break off and do our own thing. I think it was a lot of, hey, will you look at me? We had Petiti yesterday, who was much more measured in his tone, a little bit more like he had the answers to the test. What did you make of the differences between the two commissioners and kind of their approach to where we are with the sport?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. You know, there wasn't as much bravado from the Big Ten yesterday. You know, Bielema had the joke about, you know, the SEC wants to act like it's 2005 again. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think it was I think they let the action speak for them with the three trophies, the national championship trophies, seated up there at the podium when Petiti spoke. And, you know, he reiterated his stance that we want 24 teams in the playoff. We're willing to give up the conference championship game for it. But again, you know, as I was talking to some people afterward, I feel like we've had the same press conference like 3 years in a row and nothing has changed. And, you know, you see with the, you know, the issues that the conferences are having, the lawmakers, there was supposedly a deadline set today for them to respond. Of course, there's no response. The August recess is coming up in Congress. So I'm not sure what is going to happen there. If anything, probably nothing. And we're just going to continue with status quo in college football. The good news is the games are getting ready to start, and the Buckeyes are up here today. Who is it? It's Jalen McClain, Sayan, and Jeremiah, along with Coach Day. They're going to be sporting their J.P. Morgan patches around. on their suits. I'm just kidding, but that was the new part of college football. Yesterday was patch day. Everybody was announcing their patches. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, taking a step back from all the stuff off the field, I mean, I think the Big Ten's going to be really interesting this year. You know, all the top teams, it seems like they're going to be playing one another, which makes everyone's schedule infinitely more difficult. You've got, you know, Ohio State playing, you know, Indiana, USC, Oregon. Oregon's got to go to Penn State. I'm sorry, USC's got to go to Penn State early on in the year, which is going to be a big test for Matt Campbell. And, you know, Ohio State in Bloomington, I can't remember what day that is. That's going to be an incredible setting. So I think the Big Ten is just going to be a lot of fun this year. And you've got teams like Minnesota that I think are going to be pretty feisty. Mm-hmm. So I'm ready for the games to begin, so we don't have to talk about governance anymore, because it's getting to the point now. I don't care.
Me either.
Whatever. I don't care.
Me either. And honestly, Jake, they don't either. Otherwise, they'd do something. Mm-hmm. They're obviously fine with it. To your point, they have the same press conference every year. We got to do something, but none of them are willing to do a damn thing. So if they're not willing to do it, then what are we worried about it for? The games speak for themselves. And as you mentioned, and I agree with you, I think the Big Ten's headed for one of the most interesting years in its history this year, because they have legitimate national title contenders at the top. They've got a bunch of new faces and new places at premier programs where you think there could be some immediate impact. You obviously know Lincoln Riley really well. You spent some time over at Penn State this summer with Matt Campbell. Both of those guys were at the podium yesterday. What did you read into, because they're that next group that you wonder, those are two programs that have the potential to jump into that top one based on resources, history, all of that. What did you make of Matt Campbell's first Big Ten Media Day and Lincoln Riley's, what now, fourth?
Yeah, I mean, got to talk to both guys for a little bit and their, you know, their staffs and players. And you know, USC, like, I think this is the question with them, because they think that their offensive and defensive lines are different than they have ever been, say, at least since joining the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. They feel like they can toe-to-toe with anybody up front. It was interesting in bringing, you know, his quarterback, Lincoln Riley. You know, he brought defensive linemen to media day. By the way, USC's quarterback is huge. Like,
Maeva is?
He's like, yeah, he is not a little guy. He is a big dude. And so I think they're really optimistic about their ability to compete in the trenches. And then, you know, with Penn State, interestingly, that's like, Penn State does play Wisconsin at home, I think, the week before, but then they've got USC coming to State College, excuse me, in October. And, you know, that's going to be a huge litmus test early on in the Matt Campbell era. They're a weird team because, and I think they agree, like, it's so new. The team is so new that I think they're curious to see what it looks like. I mean, they're probably going to have like a dozen Iowa State starters. They've got some Penn State guys left over, especially in the trenches. You know, Zion Tracy, their kind of do-it-all defensive back, I think is going to be a key part of their defense. But, you know, how it all comes together, you know, and how quickly it can come together, I think is going to be the big key for Penn State. And can they kind of find their way before USC comes to town? So I think those are the kind of the two storylines with those teams. And, you know, it's a big year for Lincoln Riley. Like, it's mm-hmm. time to kind of become one of those top four teams in the Big Ten and make the playoff. And I think for Matt Campbell, you know, you don't have to go 12-0 this year, but you've got to, you know, start to develop some credibility with the fan base and show that, you know, okay, maybe we go 8-4, 9-3, but we're going to beat one of the big boys this year. We're going to beat a top 10 USC or whatever, because again, that was the issue with Penn State before. They could not win those type of games. I mean, they didn't win the USC game, you know, in the past.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. I think, and by the way, it's got the softest launching point for a program that I can recall. I mean, Cignetti had a soft one too, his first year at Indiana, where they played nobody. Kind of the same thing this year with Penn State. Like, the schedule really sets up for him to get off to a fast start there. It's just a matter of, can they take full advantage of it? All right, I'll get you out of here on this one. In terms of today, you got Ohio State, you got Oregon over there. What are you most looking forward to hear from those two programs, both of which are considered national title contenders, and appropriately so?
Yeah, I think that for Ohio State, you know, it's it's different than it was last year. I felt like once they got past the Texas game, especially with Penn State imploding, they just coasted to the playoff. I mean, there was really not anyone on the schedule that it felt like to me could beat them, you know, especially after, you know, Aller got hurt and Penn State fell apart. And they, you know, maybe Michigan, but Michigan was not, you know, a great team last year and obviously had problems off the field. And then they get to the playoff, Ohio State, and I don't know how battle-tested they were. You know, it was just such a big jump in competition again to Indiana and then Miami, especially up front. And this year, it's going to be different. Like, if they get to the playoff, and I think they will, they're going to be battle-tested because they've got to play, you know, we talked about who they got to play. It's everybody mm-hmm. in the Big Ten, basically, plus, you know, maybe the other best team in the country in Texas, in Austin. So is that going to help them in the playoff? I think it might. I think it could actually play in their favor where by the time they get to the playoff, they're just, we've played everybody. We're not afraid of anyone. We can, mm-hmm. we can beat anyone. And it just kind of felt like they were a little bit startled by the jump up in competition last year after, again, coasting through the regular season. And I think for Oregon, you know, Dan Lanning, we did this, you know, top 10 coaches ranking, and he's kind of in the, you know, 5, 6, 7 range. But, you know, it's time for him to win the big one. You know, mm-hmm. they've been knocking on the door. You know, they've been a playoff team. They've been a top 5 team. They were number 1 basically wire to wire a couple of years ago with Dylan Gabriel, and then they get to the Rose Bowl and get waxed by Ohio State. So I think it's time for them to make a playoff run under Dan Lanning. So again, both programs, I think rightfully so, hold national championship aspirations, and wouldn't surprise me if either one of them got there in the end. I think those are the top 2 teams in the league, along with Indiana, and it's going to be interesting to see where it shakes out because only one team is going to win the Big Ten, and only one of these teams is going to, you know, win the national championship along with whoever comes out of the SEC, most likely.
Most likely that. Enjoy the day over there, my friend. Appreciate you as always.
All right, see you both. Take care.
There he goes, Jake Trotter, ESPN senior college football reporter, joining us on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We'll do Thing or Not a Thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient 2-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
With Skip Mossick.
Saturday, we're at the Ohio State Golf Club to preview the upcoming seasons with men's coach Jay Mosley and women's coach Lisa Strom.
Tee to Green with Skip Mossick, Saturday mornings at 9 on The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Patriot Air Comfort Systems and Bryant.
Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan.
Distilled sports discussion served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Indeed you are on a first Friday. Time for a little thing or not a thing. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
So what, about a month and a half? After setting a new record for AAV in the NHL, the San Jose Sharks just signed Macklin Celebrini to a 5-year deal worth $18.8 million. That AAV is the highest in the NHL currently. Thing or not a thing?
This really jumped up a notch, didn't it? These salaries. Obviously, the
in
cap's
like
gonna...
3 months?
Right. And I guess the Flyers are to blame for all of this? Is that the read? That their offer sheet to Carlson changed the game, and then it forced Anaheim to match for Carlson, and then I'm sure Celebrini's folks said, hey, we're better than him, so we need to be more than that, and that's how that happened. Yeah, interesting. Very, yeah, I mean, it's the numbers are a big thing, and it's just a matter of can you sign. I don't know the San Jose roster to know well enough they're going to be in cap trouble or anything, but yeah, interesting.
So with the way the CBA went in the NHL, they had a flat cap for so long. So the cap has gone up the past couple of years, and it's going to keep coming up. And in the new CBAs, I guess the highest, I want to say that $20 million a year is the highest a team can go with an individual player right now.
Yeah.
So I think you've just seen for so long these contracts hadn't gone up that much. You saw Kirill Kaprizov sign the extension that put him at like 16.5, I believe. And now with the Carlson contract, the next contract is going to go up. And Carlson definitely wasn't the best player in the NHL. I don't even think he's in the top 20.
No.
But that's what the Flyers did. And Macklin Celebrini, I think you can argue already, is a top 10, maybe top 5 player in the NHL. So this is deserving. I think it's just the sticker shock of not seeing these guys get this for so long. Yeah. And now with the cap going up and their TV deals and all of this, I guess it's just something we're going to have to get used to. Also, just maybe not another good thing. Let's get Adam Fantilli done before his price keeps going up and up here.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to let you guys pick. Do we want to do Tennessee football or Ole Miss football and LSU?
Let's do the Tennessee thing, just the absurdity.
So Tennessee's linebacker Arian Carter has been suspended for 2 games by the NCAA because he returned to college after his agent had paid for a $420 flight to an NFL pre-draft training facility. Through a public records request, Knox News obtained an internal athletics department document detailing the violation and UT's protest against those penalties. As of right now, he's got to sit their first 2 games against Furman and Georgia Tech, the 5th of September, the 12th of September, respectively. He led the SEC with 7.6 tackles per game last season. He earned all-conference honors. Josh Heupel had a statement. Arian Carter represents everything that's right about college athletics, dedicating all 4 years of his career to UT. His high character, loyalty, and leadership within our program are unmatched, end quote. Looks like they're going to fight this thing or not a thing.
Yeah, I would. Not only would I fight it, I'd play him. Like, we live in a lawless college athletics, college football, and you're going to try to enforce that he got... This kid probably makes $3 million a year. You know what I mean? Did you say he was first-team All-SEC? He probably makes $1.5 million, $2 million a year. My guess of it is it's not all NIL in terms of him, you know, lending his name to a brand. It's a lot of pay-for-play, and you're telling me you're worried about $427? I mean, this isn't even Al Capone for tax evasion. It's not even that. This is Al Capone on a parking ticket.
So what I don't understand about this is they said he had declared for the NFL draft. He had signed with an agent. The agent paid for. Then he had some kind of injury pop up and decided he was going to come back to school. So you can withdraw your name.
Mm-hmm.
He paid the agent back supposedly for the flight. What's the big deal here? I mean, and what's the big deal?
It doesn't even matter.
What's the big deal anyways with all of the money they're making? But it just seems like just bad PR here, if nothing else. Like, what are we doing?
So stupid. And by the way, these guys have agents now. Doesn't matter if he hires an agent. They have agents now. Like, what are we doing?
Don't they have bigger things to worry about right now?
Yes, they do, Bake. They do.
On Tuesday, the Clarion Ledger in Jackson, Mississippi, reported Ole Miss filed civil complaints against two former football players, Princewell Uman Mielen and Devin Harper, both defensive linemen that played last year for the Rebels. They now play for LSU. The university seeking nearly $1 million combined for breach of contract. The lawsuit says that the players signed updated revenue sharing agreements with Ole Miss in January to stay with the Rebels for the 2026 season. Then both departed to LSU. The lawsuits seek to enforce early termination penalties outlined in the players' agreements. In filings obtained by the Clarion Ledger, Ole Miss is seeking almost $1 million between both of them for the unreceived payments. The buyouts were for voluntary breaching the contract in a 90-day window. Thing or not a thing?
Well, this seems like a pretty big thing, and this is going to be this lawsuit. I don't think the timing of this lawsuit is a mistake. It's right before the start of camp. I don't think that where this lawsuit was filed is a mistake in that it's in Mississippi. So, Mike, and by the way, if these two guys did take money to play in 2026 for Ole Miss and are now playing at LSU and were given money and it is a signed contract, then they should have to repay it. So how this all goes is going to have a – could potentially have a wide-reaching kind of precedent being set in terms of recouping funds that have been paid. So I'm very interested to see how this one shakes out. But none of this was by mistake. The timing, the amount, none of it. And my hunch is that if they did sign a binding document, that they will have to repay that money. And they should.
Hearing Reese try to pronounce that name makes me even appreciate our guest yesterday, Matt Moscona. How easily, how it just flew off his tongue.
That was rough on me.
Princewell Umanmielen. Like, he said it, and it just, like, didn't miss a beat. And I was like, none. Wow, that was really good. He said that name a lot of times. I think it's interesting here that an NCAA institution is bringing a lawsuit that has the word contracts in it.
Great point.
Because they usually don't like that word. That word is a no-no for NCAA and their member schools. Yeah. I mean, if they're suing over this money for contracts, this could change a lot of things. And I'm also kind of surprised LSU didn't just pay, because both these guys went to LSU. I'm surprised LSU just didn't pay whatever back to Ole Miss, because that's usually what these schools do, correct?
It is. And that's why I think the timing's interesting. Because I think this is not a problem, not a problem. Now it's a problem. I think this is gamesmanship. And you're right. It's a great point on you on the contracts. Because now who has contracts? Employees. Employers. Those have contracts. 20 most interesting. You're officially endorsed in three things. For 20 most interesting, we head to Aggieland. Texas A&M on the docket up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Sting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. It's day two of Big Ten Media Days in Chicago. Ohio State's Ryan Day will speak around 1:15. We'll carry Coach Day's comments live on the fan when he takes the podium. Julian Sain, Jeremiah Smith, and Jalen McClain will also speak with reporters Wednesday. In the NFL, first day of training camp practices for the Browns and Bengals. The Hall of Fame game's next Thursday between the Panthers and Cardinals. In football, The Athletic says the U.S. men's national team has reached an agreement with Mauricio Pochettino to manage Team USA through the 2030 World Cup. In hockey news, San Jose assigned center Macklin Celebrini to a five-year extension with an average annual value of $18.8 million, highest in the NHL. The 20-year-old Celebrini was the first overall pick in the 2024 draft. In baseball, the Reds and Guardians split a doubleheader on Tuesday. Cincinnati hosts Cleveland tonight at 7:10. Winner there claims the Ohio Cup. You can hear that game on The Fan following the Buckeye Show on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Bo knows many people.
To the interesting ones on this show.
This is Bishop and Friends.
Final hour on a First Friday Miracle edition of the program. Get your official endorse coming up at 11:48. 20 most interesting continues with the Aggies of A&M.
We'll expand conferences, we'll expand the playoffs, but we'll never, ever expand our interests. Bishop and Friends present the 20 most interesting programs.
Our focus today is in Aggieland. Texas A&M and the Aggies head coach Mike Elko entering his third season, 19-7 in the league, 35-16 overall, made the playoff last year after an 11-1 regular season that saw them losing the first round of the CFP in a rock fight of a gross game against Miami, 10-3 in that one. They returned five starters on offense. Quarterback Marcel Reed going to be the linchpin of all of that. They have some weaponry, obviously. No longer Casey Concepcion as he's with the Cleveland Browns. Five starters return on defense as well, but as is typical for Texas A&M, they were big in the portal and did a nice job in the portal. Several players coming over and in the mix. This feels like the first time really in my time around college football going back 25 years that Texas A&M kind of has a sustainable plan for how to be successful. Their recruiting class ranking in 26 was ranked number 10 overall. Their transfer class ranking was ranked number 12 overall. They brought in 19 there, combined ranking for 10th overall, but they're recruiting at a high level. We know they have money to spend in spades. It is a specific space to sell to, though, as we know, with the Yell Leaders and all of the stuff that comes with that. I've never been to a game at Texas A&M. Several of my buddies have. The one thing that I kind of hear back when you hear about A&M is it's just different there. and it looks that way when you see it on television. But they are a massive program with big money. They are probably the definition of a sleeping giant, I think, from the standpoint of what don't they have? What exactly don't they have? They have every single thing that you ought to want. They have location, proximity to talent in spades. They have money in oil and about every other industry that you'd want. They have that in spades. They have passion. They have facilities. They have the state of Texas. The only thing they don't kind of have is they have to sell that it's kind of a little bit of a different place to go to school. But that's about it. Everything else is a home run. It seems like they finally hit a home run on a head coach. Felt like they were headed this way with Kevin Sumlin about 10 years ago, and that went off the rails quick at the end of Johnny Manziel. Then they hired Jimbo Fisher for big money, beat LSU to him, gave him a new contract. Then that, he does have his ranches. It's back in Tallahassee, by the way. No ranches in Tallahassee. They have all of these things that kind of feel like they should be ready to take off with Mike Elko. I didn't understand the Elko went higher when they made it. Didn't know enough about him to know if it was going to be something that would elevate them or not. It appears that it was. I think what makes Texas A&M interesting is, can Texas A&M vault ahead of previous SEC powers? What I mean by that is, because of their financial might and their proximity to talent, can Texas A&M find themselves in a position where all of a sudden that's a better job than Alabama? That's a better job than eventually Ole Miss. That's a better job than Florida. That's a better job than Tennessee. That is the thing that to me will be fascinating about this program and Mike Elko over the next 3 to 5 years, is what do they look like 5 years from now after a decade in this NIL free transfer world?
Feels like a program headed in the right direction. Certainly, if you could buy stock, that would be one team you would consider. I mean, the two losses that they had on the season, they were leading at 10-0 against Texas. That game was in Austin. And then the college football playoff game, that might have been, from a is this entertaining standpoint, between Miami and Texas A&M, the worst of the college football playoff games. Because at least in the blowouts, you saw one team just keep rolling and scoring points-wise. This one, I think, had 10 points in the fourth quarter, and it was a 10-3 win by the Hurricanes.
It's a gross game, man.
So I wonder about Marcel Reed. I think he's great as a – he's very Johnny Manziel-esque, but he's got a lot of – he doesn't have Mike Evans to chuck the ball down the field to. And that's the one thing I think that they need. And obviously, you know, they've done really well in high school recruiting. They'll do really well in the transfer portal every year. So maybe given another season, this can turn into something special. But they've, to me – not in the same boat as SMU, because they've landed the biggest names. They've landed those five-star guys from the portal, but they've got to make them work. They got to make them work in Aggieland, too. They can't just get them on campus, and then a year later, they're all in the portal. Because that's what derailed Jimbo.
It did, yep.
So, you talk about their recruiting, and as of right now, they're the number one recruiting class in the country for next year.
They sure
according to 24/7 Sports. So they are doing a good job and have been doing a good job. I just wonder if they're not a sleeping giant, if this is what they are. If it's kind of like Penn State, where we say this is what the ceiling is for Penn State is, or now. I wonder if that's how it is with Texas A&M. If they're a team that's really, really good, can make the college football playoffs every now and then, but they're never going to get over the hump, because it seems like for the past 15-ish years, they've been a team that's been knocking on the glass ceiling, but they just can't quite break through. And I wonder if this is their ceiling. Now, I think Mike Elko's a really good ball coach. But I just don't know. Like, I feel like we've been saying the same thing about Texas A&M for a long time.
So you said something a really smart guy once said to me. Maybe they aren't a sleeping giant. Maybe this is just what they are. And maybe that is true. Maybe that is. The only thing that puts a little bit of a monkey wrench in that statement is just this world of NIL. And you mentioned what they're doing in recruiting right now. Number one class in the country coming in for 2027. So that is something. And what's interesting to that, I don't even know the answer to this. I'm just pulling it up right now. But what I do think is interesting to that is, where that number one class, is it a quarterback? And the answer to that is no, it's not. It's not a quarterback. It's offensive tackle, defensive line. It's not that type of position. And in order to win one, you usually got to have a guy like that who is a five-star can't-miss guy. This is a quick aside here, but as I pull up the 24/7 top classes for 2027, here's the list. A&M is one, Notre Dame is two, Oregon is three, Miami is four, Oklahoma five, Texas six, Ohio State seven, Texas Tech eight. That's your top eight. Who did you not hear? Georgia? Bama? Nowhere. Bama's in the 40s. The next three are all SEC teams, Florida, LSU, then Auburn, Georgia. That's 9 through 12. The top eight are none of the teams in the Deep South, and Alabama's in the 40s. So this is what I think is the most fascinating thing here. You look at these teams, and recruiting isn't all of it. It's part of it. It's portal. It's putting pieces together. But you look at these top eight teams, these are either massive institutions with incredible financial might. Ohio State, Oregon, Texas. I mean, these are huge alumni bases. Or it's new money in the case of Miami, or it's oil money in the case of Texas A&M, Oklahoma, and Texas Tech. So you better have the money if you're going to want to recruit at a high level, and A&M's always going to have the money. They may always be what they were last year, but honestly, Bake, that's better than they're entitled to be. If they could be the Penn State of the SEC and make the playoff all the time and go 10-2, that's a step up from what they have been historically. So to me, what makes them interesting is, can they supplant Georgia, Alabama? Can they become the constant at the top of that league over the next 3 to 5 years with LSU and Texas and Oklahoma and everybody else? And then that's just a buy on Elko. It's also interesting you bring up Penn State, because I think Penn State and Texas A&M are both very, very unique places to choose to go achieve a higher education. Texas A&M isn't the outpost that Happy Valley is, but if you're going to choose either one of them, you're making a choice in terms of location, in terms of culture, in terms of everything around the program. I think those two programs actually have a lot in common at Texas A&M and Penn State. And this, if he can stack this year at A&M, look out. And the schedule is one, he gets to wade into it a little bit. They go Missouri State, then they go Arizona State, then Kentucky, all three at home. Then a massive game in Baton Rouge, but that comes after LSU. Boy, Lane's schedule's crazy. So he goes to Ole Miss, and then he's hosting A&M at the end of September. Then they've got Arkansas at Missouri Citadel. Those all three should be win. A massive game in Tuscaloosa in late October. Then they're at South Carolina, and then they close really strong. Tennessee at home, at Oklahoma, hosting Texas. So the schedule is one, it's not as easy as it was a year ago for him. There's certainly some more challenges there. But if they can get to 9-3, 10-2, and then all of a sudden you bring in that recruiting class, now maybe you're cooking with gas a little bit for Mike Elko. He's done a heck of a job there, and the momentum in recruiting is very, very real. And the money's not going anywhere. They're going to have money to spend for days at Texas A&M. We'll hit the categories on the Aggies coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Guy Replay this summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
Scott McMullen leads the Buckeyes past Penn State in a 2003 classic.
Hear Buckeye Replay this Saturday at 1 p.m. on The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Plan on a good deal of sunshine for the rest of the day. Nice humidity levels and a little breeze from the north from time to time. Highs climb to right around 80 or so. Overnight, mainly clear skies, 59. For your Thursday, a lot of sunshine once again. Still nice out there with highs near 83. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. What's the weather outside? Who cares? Bakers and shorts. This is Bishop and Friends.
A little bit of breaking news before we get to the categories on the Aggies down in Cincinnati. Mike Petraglia, our buddy, with a video, among others, that the Bengals training staff is carting Shamar Stewart off the field. That happened here in the last couple of minutes. I have no context on the hit or what it was, but he's being carted off down in Cincinnati. Now, that could just be, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean the worst. Doesn't mean the worst necessarily, but it's never good when it happens. Go ahead.
Sounds like he got up and they said he took a couple steps gingerly.
Okay.
And then they carted him off. So maybe it's precaution. Who knows? But you never want to see that.
No. And part of the reason we're so bullish on them is because they have invested so heavily in the draft and in free agency on that defensive line. And he is going to be thought to be a very, very big part of that first round pick from a year ago. So being carted off down in Cincinnati, I see they already had a fight as well. Jamar Chase was slinging.
Oh, hell yeah. We're back, baby.
We're back. See, that's what you love about it. You have somebody like Jamar Chase. Like, for some people, you fight and you get into it a little bit and you're like, oh, dude, come on. But for Jamar, that's elevating folks around. And so he's throwing DJ Turner's helmet. So I think that's a little bit of juice down in Cincinnati as they are underway down there. Cleveland will be underway in about an hour and a half or something like that up in Berea. Time to hit the categories for Giga Maggie. If I told you, like, let's say you'd never heard that before, and I asked you, do you think that they have people dressed in uniform on this campus, what would you say?
Yes.
I mean, that is a cavalry hymn, if I've ever heard one. That is we are headed out to the Great Plains, and we've got some wars to fight. That is marching song, if I've ever heard one. It's the Aggie War Hymn at Texas A&M. College Football 26 adaptability grade, Reese.
Well, I think this is a solid A. Mm-hmm. I think they've done a great job of compiling guys with stars. I think they've built themselves into a pretty competitive brand in the SEC. They're just not an A-plus yet because they haven't done anything with it.
Yeah.
I mean, they made the College Football playoffs, so that's not... that's not nothing. But boy, do you wish you could get the neuralizer and not watch, or I guess forget watching, Miami, Texas A&M.
That was the worst college football game of consequence I think I've ever seen.
I've got them at an A-, and it seems like they do everything right except put the right mix together. They're right there. They just got to get over that hump.
Yeah, I think it's probably an A. Just for historical perspective on Texas A&M, in the last 30 years, they have had a total of 3 seasons where they've won 10 games or more. Last year was one of them. So it doesn't happen very often. Their best stretch was in the early 90s. I believe R.C. Slocum was the coach at that point when they were in the Southwestern Conference. That was their best stretch. They had 4 straight seasons with 10 wins or more. So, but for this day and age, I think it is probably an AA-, something like that. And you're right. I think Reese hit it. They just need to go land the dude. And they've done it. I mean, they landed, like, Kyler Murray. They landed him. They just couldn't keep him. They did it with those defensive line with Jimbo. They just couldn't keep him. So that's the next challenge. So I'm going to go A- on it as well, but it appears that they have almost everything in their favor, which brings us to our next category, uniform brand grade for A&M, Reese.
Well, I think the uniform's average to me. I do, however, still connect it to Johnny Manziel. Like, mm-hmm. Whenever I see anything Texas A&M, I'm seeing him throw up the money fingers. So, and that's probably something that'll stick with me as much as watching Vince Young in the corner of the end zone against USC is Texas.
Yeah.
So for that, like, the brand there is, I'll give it a B in terms of the overall grade. Jersey's average, but the history's been a lot of fun. I think kids, how do your youngins feel about the Aggies? And that whole thing.
Beamsy likes him, I think, just to be different. Like, he likes me making fun of how stupid the Yell Leaders are.
It is. It's dumb.
Yeah.
But they love it down there, and those who are affiliated and associated with A&M love it.
Yeah, they do.
Reese, I'm with you here. I got the whole package of B. I don't love the uniform. They're obviously getting people there, though, with the number one recruiting class in the country for next year. So I think the whole thing is a B.
I think it's an F.
Wow.
I think it's an F. I think the brand is one of the biggest reasons that they haven't achieved more. Because I think it's a tough sell. I think for a kid, the Yell Leaders are a tough sell. I think they're always going to have to overpay. I think that the guys in uniform, even I don't even like a collie as a dog. Like, even that, I don't like. I think the uniforms are completely average. The best ones that they ever wore were when they had the white hats. Those were sort of okay, but they're pretty much not different from, like, Mississippi State or the rest of them. I think the brand is the one thing that's kind of holding them back. I think they have everything else except the brand. Historical player you'd pick for this Texas A&M team. Lots to choose from here, Reese.
Mike Evans. I think he would just elevate Marcel Reed so much because you just chuck it up in the air. And even today's college football, was the Mike Evans thing 10 years ago?
It was Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, about a decade. Yeah, we're all old.
But even now, that would still play in college football.
So I thought about Mike Evans, but I think they have a pretty good receiving core returning, and they added Horton from Alabama to that. There's a lot of guys on defense. I thought about Datwin because they lost a lot in their linebacker room.
You just hate Myles Garrett. Is that it?
I thought about Von Miller, but I am going Myles Garrett.
Oh, you're going to go Miles. Okay.
This team needs a pass rusher on defense. One of their starting DNs is a transfer from Northwestern, and no offense to him, I don't think he's Myles Garrett. So
no,
give me Garrett.
I think you guys all mentioned the ones that are no-brainers, and I think the three most no-brainer are Evans, Garrett, and Vaughn. I'm going to go in the Wayback Machine for this one because I just like to see this guy play college football, and the old heads are going to remember him. Running back Leland McElroy, dual-threat running back out of A&M in the mid-90s. He was a second-round pick. He could catch it out of the backfield. He could run it. Pretty dynamic player. Put him next to Marcel Reed, and let's see what's happening here. Would they get an official visit from Vince Howard? It's in-state, Reese.
I said probably. So if we're going to give it a grade, like a C+, B-, he wouldn't be at the top of the Texas list, but they might have enough cash in front of him in terms of an offer sheet, because that's what they're giving to these guys to come on campus if the guys aren't already interested in them.
Sure.
I gave it a B+ grade because I think, as you said, they'd have enough cash. If it wasn't for the cash, I don't know if he would, but I think that would get him there.
How many kids do you think visit? Do you think if you're a kid growing up in Texas, you're either a Longhorn or an Aggie? Like, if your parents didn't go to Baylor or TCU or SMU, are you one of those or are you Oklahoma? Like, it's, you know, I wonder where, like, how that breaks down. The reason I say that is, like, if I'm going to have Vince Howard take official visits to Texas and I'm going to have him take an official visit to Oklahoma, would he also take one to A&M? This feels like the most, just culturally, the most different for the character that he was. So I'm going to say C. They would probably have to pay for it, but I don't see him playing at A&M. Coach grade. Mike Elko, Reese.
It's a B+. He's got a win in the playoff, but so far, so good. Just in this is third season.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mike Elko's a really good coach. I have this as an A-.
I'm more aligned with you on this one, Bake. I think it's probably there, too. I didn't see it coming. That was a bold choice. I mean, Elko was at Duke. Like, you want to talk about completely different vibes. Duke and Aggieland are two very, very different vibes, but he came in there, brought in accountability right away, brought in winning right away, has shown to be adaptable. It was a brutal game in the playoff game, but at the same time, like, got Reed going a little bit, won some big games last year, and is doing it in recruiting as well. So it's kind of all there for him to have some sustained momentum down in College Station. Sliding door moment for the program, Reese.
I'm going to go with September 10th of 2022. They lost to Appalachian State, ranked 6th in the country with that I've Got Ranches class of all 5-star. Like, Zach Calzada, remember him? Like, all of this, the defensive talent that they were supposed to have. They lose to the App State 17-14. Again, they were ranked number 6, and it was just a spiral from that point.
I had them going to the SEC because it got them into a different part of the country and maybe they could get a different kid and not recruit against Texas and Oklahoma all the time. Now, that might have got slammed shut when those two joined the SEC, but I think them joining the SEC is the moment.
I think joining the SEC and proving the moment that Johnny Manziel beat Alabama was probably the most iconic moment in the history of their program, because that's Saban at the peak of his powers, and they couldn't hackle Manziel, and that showed them what was possible. And then they they really floundered because Sumlin flamed out in a big way. Like, he got Kyler Murray, who was the number one player in the country. He got him to A&M, but then they couldn't keep him. He ended up at Oklahoma, wins the Heisman there. Sumlin's out on his rear end, and then they brought in Jimbo, and Jimbo couldn't land the plane. And so it's probably all of the things that you guys are mentioning. Probably the one that benefits them most is the combination of all of them. The fact that they joined the SEC, the fact that NIL came into impact, the fact that money could buy players, the fact that they have it in spades, that put them into the spot that they were in a very, very big way. And obviously Elko had history there. He'd been there before, but that was an inspired choice following Jimbo Fisher. And as loud as that hire was, to go in a little bit of a different route was interesting, and it's worked. Win it all, make the playoff too soon, or flame out for Aggieland, Reese?
I think it's too soon, but I think the expectation should be to make the playoff.
So I don't know how we can say too soon because they made it there last year.
Yeah.
So I'm going to call this a flame-out season because I don't think they're making the playoff. Now, that should be the expectation, as you said, Reese. But it's obviously not too soon. They did it last year, so this is a flame-out for me.
It's probably a bad job out of us. We probably need one more in there, which is like step back. So I think this is a step-back season.
That is perfect for this one.
Right? I mean, this feels like a step-back team. Like, they'll miss the postseason. I don't think they're going anywhere. Like, I think they're going to be consistent contenders in the SEC, but I don't think they're a playoff team this year. I think they're on the outside looking in. What makes them interesting to me is, can they become a consistent playoff team in the SEC and supplant what Georgia has been, supplant what Alabama has been over the last 2 or 3 years? Matthew Gallatin is going to join us coming up next. He hosts Locked On Aggies for some perspective on Texas A&M. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
20 most interesting programs today lands in Aggieland, Texas A&M, a playoff participant a year ago. Can they back it up this season? For perspective, we had on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems fan guest hotline. Matthew Gallatin joins us, host of Locked On Aggies. Matthew, thank you so much for taking the time. I guess before we get into this year, because the reason that we put them on the list this year is not only because they made the playoff, but because in this era of college football where we are in now, Texas A&M feels like it's on the ascent, while some of those traditional SEC powers feels like they are descending. What do you make of where A&M is right now as a program for this year and in the next 3 to 5?
Well, I think you kind of have to look at it in a couple of different ways, right? I mean, yes, they made the playoff. Yes, Mike Elko is on the ascent. He's 11-1 last year, the best record since 1994. But they're also turning over a massive roster, so there's a lot of questions at a lot of really key positions going into the season. And that's what makes this team so intriguing, in my opinion, is will they take a step back and, you know, get back to the 8-4 Aggies that everybody, you know, yells at every year? Or are we going to, you know, take a step forward and finally get over the hump of beating Texas and winning a playoff game?
Is Mike Elko, in terms of, I mean, you've been there before, obviously, and you mentioned, we know the year that they had last year, which was obviously very, very special. The one thing from the outside, 30,000 feet, is it always seemed to me like, can A&M get everybody rowing in the same direction? Because obviously they have the financial might. We've seen that in the NIL era. We saw that in the Jimbo era. We saw that with facilities, the Sumlin era. Like, they've got money to spend. Can they all row in the same direction? What are you seeing in terms of the relationship between Elko and the boosters and the NIL funds and all of those things, administration, all of it? Are they now one united front across the board down there?
I really do believe they are. And this is the first time that I've seen A&M as united and cohesive and working in the same direction since R.C. Slocum. There was way too many hands in the pot, too many hands in the kitchen with Jimbo Fisher. The Kevin Sumlin thing was kind of a beautiful disaster of amazing offense and everything else kind of falling apart at the seams. This is the first coach they have had since R.C. Slocum who truly understands what it means to be an Aggie and understands the culture of College Station and of the university. And he has the full support of the donors. They love the direction that he's going, and everybody's working in that direction, and it seems to be going incredibly well.
Matthew, for our audience who hasn't been down there, and to be, I haven't been there either, for full disclosure, just seen it from afar, obviously. When you talk about the culture that is College Station and you talk about selling that culture, what is the culture and how is Elko being so successful selling it? Because obviously I see what he's doing in recruiting in 2027.
Well, it's kind of hard to explain, quite honestly. I mean, if anybody's ever been to College Station, one of the first things they say is, "Huh?" Like it's definitely unique, and I think it's a family culture. I think that they, you know, I really don't know how to describe it, man. It's like everybody knows what it means to be an Aggie if you're an Aggie. If you're not an Aggie, yeah. You don't know what it means to be an Aggie. And I think that Mike, and I'm not an Aggie, you know, yeah. But I cover the football team, so it's hard for me to really get my head around. What I can tell you is that Mike Elko understands it. And if Mike Elko understands it, then that means that he's going to be able to do some really special things down there.
All right, let's talk about this team this year. Obviously, as you mentioned, a lot of guys that they have to replace, active in the portal again. They bring back the quarterback. If they are to have success this year, what does it need to look like? What needs to happen?
Ooh, boy. There's a lot of different questions that could go into this one. First and foremost, for me, it has to fall on Marcel Reed. You know, everybody talks about guys like Arch Manning and Dante Moore having this massive pressure on their shoulders heading into the year. Marcel Reed's got almost as much pressure as some of those guys. I mean, probably not to the same extent, but, I mean, this is a guy that really, really struggled down the stretch in their most important games of the season against Texas and against Miami. He threw too many interceptions. He wasn't accurate. He wasn't consistent. The offense really is going to flow on him, and they're going to live and die by Marcel Reed. And, you know, by extension, the offensive line is the only thing standing between him and the issues that he faced last year, which is where he would get happy feet. He would force the football too much. If he got under pressure, he would really start to struggle. Now you've got four new starters along the offensive line. How do they gel together? How do they protect him? Can he trust that? So those are two really, really emphatic points just on the offensive side of the ball. And then on the defensive side of the ball, you're replacing almost your entire defensive line. Your best linebacker is out for at least the first few weeks with an injury. And a lot of new faces in the secondary. So there's so many facets of this football team that have changed or that have pressure upon them that really need to hit in order for this team to be as successful as we think they're capable of being.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at it, and we have a bunch of categories like how we decide on how to judge them. So from my vantage point, it looks like they could possibly take a small step back, but I don't know that will necessarily do anything to the momentum of the program. By step back, I mean maybe they miss the playoff this year. From my vantage point, it looks like the schedule's pretty robust, especially that last month. From your perspective, someone who covers the team day in and day out, what will you set as a realistic expectation for this team?
I would say, you know, my realistic expectation is for them to make the playoffs. I think they're one of the top five teams in the SEC, even with all of the changes, assuming everything goes the way that you know, they're capable of going. I think this is a top five SEC team. I think they're a fringe playoff team, probably not a first round bye team or maybe not even a hosting school. But top four, top five in the SEC, something like 10-2, 9-3. What's really going to define the season for them is that last week of the season. You got Texas, you got Oklahoma, you got a tricky one heading to South Carolina. You've got Alabama. I mean, there's just so much in that last week, last month of the season that makes it that really is the swing point of the season. If they can get through that at 10-2. You know, I think that they're going to be in pretty good shape.
So one thing that we're kind of hammering in, we have Big Ten media days this week. We had the commissioner, Tony Petitti, speaking yesterday about kind of the Big Ten's agenda. Last week, obviously, we had SEC media days and the agenda being spoken down there from Sankey and Kirby and all of those guys. What matters to Texas A&M in their administration and their coaches? What do they want if anything, changed about where college football is now? Are they in lockstep with Sankey as a relative newbie of the SEC? I say relative because they've been there a while now. Are they in lockstep with Sankey's way of thinking? Because it feels like they're kind of benefiting from the world that we're in right now.
I think one of the few schools that from the SEC who can truly say they've benefited from the way things have gone lately is Texas A&M. But that being said, I do think that they're in lockstep with Sankey. I think that most of the top teams in the SEC are in lockstep with Sankey. Texas A&M, Georgia, you know, LSU, Oklahoma. I feel like they are kind of I feel like they're on the same wavelength. Okay. And I feel like that's why the SEC is successful. And now, maybe I'm wrong about some of these other schools, but I certainly get that feeling from Texas A&M.
So we have a lot of Cleveland Browns fans in the audience, and obviously Casey Concepcion. You watched every game he played last year and during his time down at Texas A&M. What are Browns fans going to get in Casey Concepcion, and what do you make of the impact he could have this year in Cleveland?
I mean, how many different ways can you deploy this kid? I mean, he's one of the most electric, versatile players that you're going to find at the in the NFL draft from last season. He can do punt returns, kick returns. He can play inside at the slot. He can play outside. You're getting a kid that every time he touches the football, it has the potential to be a home run. And also a kid that, quite frankly, is going to outwork just about everybody else in that wide receiver room if you give him the opportunity to. So I really think that Cleveland fans are going to love Casey Concepcion. I can see him becoming a fan favorite very, very quickly, just like he did in College Station, because, I mean, he's likable, he works harder than everybody else, and he's a super electric football player.
Matthew, I'll get you out of here on this one, and this one just from my own curiosity, because I mentioned obviously a lot of Browns fans, and certainly Johnny was with the Browns famously. How present is he in this A&M program? How around the program is he?
I mean, you'll see him on the sidelines occasionally. He had a bar in town. I don't know if it's still there.
Okay.
But he's around. You know, he loves coming to games and, you know, being a part of the festivities. I'm not sure that Mike Elko is bringing him into team meetings or having him give motivational speeches or anything of that nature. But he's certainly still revered around College Station as a legend, and the fans love him, so they like to see him around.
Matthew, great stuff. Really appreciate your time today and lending us a little bit of it as well. Thanks for your time, bud.
Absolutely. Happy to do it.
All right, there he goes. Matthew Gallatin, host of Locked on Aggies on Texas A&M. And I think a consensus, borderline, perhaps a little step back for them, but a program to keep their eye on with NIL and free transfer and everything that they're doing in recruiting. We get you officially endorsed in three things coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Football camp is coming, and our team of fan personalities will be there live. All the sweaty sack fun starts Thursday, August 6th. For tickets, head to Ticketmaster.com, your home of the Buckeyes. The Fan. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Race, what are you on the poll today?
Daily Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, are you okay with Ohio State having a jersey patch sponsor? 86% say yes.
Yeah. I said this yesterday. It's a sophisticated football audience. Like, we're aware here of how the game is played. And we were a little bit ahead of it a couple of years ago when we were saying, when everyone was making such a big deal about a $20 million roster, and we said, yes, so? That's what I would have, that would have been my approach. Yeah, so? Wait till you get a load of what we're going to do next. Like, this is the world we live in now. And to be able to get out in front of it and have a really good brand, a reputable brand on your jersey, that works. All of those things work. So, yeah, everybody understands that you got to find money in places, and that's what's going on here. I think that number is going to go up exponentially over the next couple of years, by the way, when you think about a jersey patch across 36 athletic teams, including the most powerful and popular college football team in the country. Let's get your official endorse on this fine First Friday.
Bishop and Friends present First Friday. Officially endorsed, because everyone deserves two Fridays.
You drink for the wrong reasons.
My generation, we drink because it's good. Because it feels better than unbuttoning your collar. Because we deserve it. We drink because it's what men do.
So it's not steamy hot here, but it was oven hot last week when I was in the home state of Montana. And so looking for something as we were out on the lake kind of cruising around and stumbled upon something. I'm sure people do this. It's just the first time I've ever had it. So I took not the giant Yeti, but like a medium-sized Yeti. So kind of a tall one, but not the mammoth one. I would say it's probably 16 ounces, maybe something like that. Loaded it with ice. Threw a shot of Grand Centenario Silver Tequila in the bottom of it, and then filled it with coconut water and then a heavy lime squeeze and shook it. Refreshing, hydrating, pretty dang good. And I don't have a name for it, but threw it together. It worked out pretty good, and I think you'd enjoy it as well. If you are someone who doesn't necessarily love the taste of coconut water, I get it, but it's pretty masked by the lime and by the tequila, and it makes for a nice mix. A little bit of a play on ranch water a little bit, but using the coconut water instead. Kind of a delight, and good enough for your officially endorsed on this fine first Friday with summer still happening around here. Time for three things on a first Friday.
Hit it. One, two, three
things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
So, number one for me, all summer long we had buddies, dog walkers, and family friends and buddies come over to take care of him as we were in Virginia and Maryland and all of these things. But these were 2 and 3 night trips at most. For the Montana trip, which is a full week, just didn't feel like that was going to quite do it in terms of getting people in and out and walking him and all of those things. We have a place like a friend who would just take him for a week. So we decided to board him. We get him, you know, he's got his little suite. He's not around any other dogs. We can watch him all the time, so forth and so on. Yesterday, though, after the joy of seeing him for the first time, the next thing I noticed was my guy is sneezing like he's sticking his nose in a pound of pepper. So one of two things happened. Either something is stuck in his nose, possible, or he caught some sort of virus at the doggy hotel, which would really suck if that's the case. But he's sneezing like a maniac right now. So we got to get this thing sorted out.
First thing for me, I see from Jake Fisher, who works with Mark Stein covering the NBA. They both veteran NBA reporters. The Cavs are looking to give James Harden a contract at no more than 2 guaranteed years. So I'm just doing this for fellow Cavs fans out there to kind of mentally prepare yourselves for the news that's to come. But to Kenny Atkinson, I say, you don't have to start James Harden. You don't have to.
Reese, let me ask you this. Would you rather have Darius Garland and Jaylen Brown or Donovan Mitchell and James Harden?
The first one.
Right. That's the tricky part.
And I wish I could
love Mitchell, but...
Right. I wish I could go back and punch myself in the face for saying that I understood the Cavs dealing Garland for Harden because they couldn't rely on Garland to even be on the court and they needed to do something and it was desperate. And I kind of explained it away at that point. I wish I could punch myself for that.
I thought that trade was for cap flexibility, and 2 more years of Harden does not sound good.
It reeked of desperation then, and it's even worse now knowing that LeBron, it might have been a different decision.
Also, I'm not sure Harden stays anywhere for 2-3 years anymore, so you may be able to do that. You trade him, so.
Yeah.
First thing for me, we have talked a lot about e-bikes and scooters on this program and how they are a problem and a menace to society. Well, the city of Sacramento agrees because they recently announced that it would be offering free e-bike and scooter safety classes. However, the Sacramento Rivercats AAA baseball team mascot was not participating in those. Over the weekend, he collided with Oklahoma City Comets minor leaguer Alec Thomas. As Thomas was coming out of the dugout, Thomas used to be the starting center fielder for the Arizona Diamondbacks. He was traded to the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he's in AAA now. So the mascot was riding this scooter around like the warning track. Well, he was taking it down by the dugout, and Thomas is coming out like putting his gloves on and everything, running out of the dugout, and they collided. maybe let's not have mascots on scooters, because I'm sure it's kind of hard to see in that suit anyway. But also, let's not have them anywhere near the players maybe running.
Are e-bikes and electric scooters the transportation equivalent of social media?
Yeah.
We all like it, but we know it's bad. That's kind of where I'm at with it. I think that we all know that we'd like to not do it, and but it's kind of fun. So yeah,
there's a generation that can't get around without it.
That's right. Yep. Number two for me. So caught up on House of the Dragon last night. It's still pretty good. They're doing a good job with it. They've incredible cast. They have written the main female lead in such an impossibly stupid way in the last couple of episodes that it just makes no damn sense. And I think they're on a kind of a precipice of ending this thing really absurdly the way that they have written her over the last couple of episodes.
I'll dovetail that into my second thing, because I think they have the story already written. Like, you kind of know if you've watched enough Game of Thrones, or if you've looked into stuff online about Game of Thrones, and you know like the ending to it. So at least you'll get the ending George R. R. Martin wrote.
Yeah.
Instead of just the, well, this seems fine. And then Bran ends up ruler of the Seven Kingdoms. Spoiler alert.
Right.
So stupid.
So the way things have been for a while here, it seems like life has been very fast-paced and hustle and bustle and vacation in there and some golf outings on the weekends and this and that, that I hadn't hit my grill for quite some time. Mm. I was able to do that last night. Grilled up some burgers, grilled up some chicken thighs. Man, it was good to be back.
That wins. That always wins. Number three for me, you know what else wins? I'm always reticent to start football because it means summer is over. But I'm going to go to Browns camp today and get an eye on that. We're going to be at Buckeye camp next week. NBC starts high school football on Friday. I'm in. I'm ready to go. Let's go. Football is here, and away we go, kids.
In case you missed it, Ryan Day is going to speak at the podium at 1:15 this afternoon. Yeah, 1:15 Eastern time. In Chicago, Rothman and Ice will endeavor to carry Coach Day's comments when he takes the podium at 1:15 Eastern time. I have to say it again.
I will take that one step further, Reese. They will be carrying Coach Day. They're not there going to effort to. They will be carrying Coach Day at 1:15. We'll also have Adam Schefter a little later than normal, 12:45 today.
You have that to look forward to, which is nice. It's a first Friday. Make sure you act accordingly. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends right here.
Atlas Butler has convenient two-hour service windows for heating, cooling, and plumbing service. Because nobody likes waiting around. You listen in, BMB? Nobody likes waiting around.